Is she right? Is it a medieval view? And how have we got to the situation of 50,000 coming in? Plus, in an example of lawless Britain, shoplifters are emptying pharmacies' shelves. Police do nothing. Nine out of ten pharmacies have been affected. Sanjeev Panesar runs in some in Birmingham.
We've got high-risk medicines on premises. If they are stolen, they're subject to abuse, they can be life-threatening. So I think it's really important that we get the support to keep our premises safe, keep our staff safe.
Dust up on the London Underground. One passenger drops his trousers, people go in to detain him. Now they're being sought by police. Plus, how Donald Trump says we need to take control of bedlam and squalor in Washington, D.C. All after the news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, officials have warned the hot weather has led to nationally significant water shortfalls across England. Five areas remain in drought and six more are in prolonged dry weather status as the country faces more hot, dry conditions. Amber heat health alerts will kick in across southern and central England this morning. Forecaster Steph Galter says the warnings are significant.
These are for people who work in health or social care, and it's just to let them know that there is likely to be an increased demand on their services over the next few days because it's going to be hot and the vulnerable people will need that little bit of extra care.
President Trump has again warned there will likely be some land swapping to end the war in Ukraine. There are growing concerns about the US-Russia-Alaska summit going ahead on Friday without Ukraine's involvement. European leaders, including Keir Starmer, will hold talks with Mr. Trump tomorrow. The Health Secretary, Wes Streetings, told LBC that resident doctors in England will not be going on strike again in August. It follows a five-day walkout by members of the British Medical Association in their row over pay. But he's warned the jury's out on whether a deal can be reached. Mr. Streetings told us he is trying to work constructively with the BMA.
They've agreed to hold off strike action during the month of August so that we can see if we can work together and find resolution. Those discussions are ongoing and I welcome the fact that that they're not going on strike this month.
It does mean they could next month.
It does. And it does, you know, ultimately it takes two to tango in a negotiation.
The BMA says it wants to see a credible offer on pay to avoid further strike action. A union's warned nurses are facing abhorrent levels of violence in emergency departments. The Royal College of Nursing says long waits, staffing issues and corridor care are driving anger among patients. Ministers say anyone responsible for abuse will feel the full force of the law. The Duke and Duchess of Sussex have signed a new multi-year deal with Netflix. Harry and Meghan's first contract with the streaming giant was thought to be worth more than $100 million. The latest deal with Netflix will give the broadcaster the first option on any of the couple's projects. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 91.29 after closing up 33 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, hot and sunny for most, a bit cloudier further north, a high of 34 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet, ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. Two sugars in mind? Tough. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you. Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven, Tuesday, August the 12th. Quotes, women are at risk of rape by small boat migrants with warped views, put forward by a Reform UK MP yesterday. As they tried to appeal, women for reform was the backdrop. I'm asking you particularly if you are a woman, how you react to that, and more broadly, of course, those so-called medieval views that she talked of. We'll look at that in more detail. In other news, lawless Britain continues. Attacks on A&E nurses up by 91% in just 6 years. Laura McSorley is a nurse at Queen's Medical Centre in Nottingham.
Recently I was spat at by a patient that I was trying to care for. It's an ongoing issue. So spitting, we've had punches thrown.
Inching towards some kind of deal? Russia, Ukraine, brokered by the United States. We'll give you more details on that. But for this shocking story, we come back home to the UK.
The tenants of a block of flats in London, which has been swarmed by rats, say it's a living nightmare. I'm LBC's Helen Hodnott with the exclusive.
And I'll tell you that we have some video. You will not believe it. If you're squeamish, by the way, I'll give you a warning before we put it up. You might not want to watch it with the number of rats involved. Problems of a different sort in Washington, according to President Trump.
Our capital city has been overtaken by violent gangs and bloodthirsty criminals, roving mobs of wild youth, drugged out maniacs and homeless people. And we're not going to let it happen anymore. We're not going to take it.
Lawless that side of the Atlantic, lawless this side of the Atlantic, where now shops who want to put up posters of shoplifters or shop thieves are told it breaches their, the thieves, data rights.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Just a pause, just a thought before we go on. You know the 50,000 people who've crossed the channel to get here? Do you think they've been reading the headlines? Do you think they know what they're coming to? This is a country now where shop theft, shoplifting and mobile phones is out of control. A government minister admits this. Where attacks on nurses have gone up 91% in just a few years. And where if a shop puts up a sign saying this person has thieved, that's a breach of the thief's data rights. And people are flocking to come here. I'm surprised it's not going the other way. No wonder politics, traditional politics, seems to be failing. No wonder there is an appeal, because, of course, the Conservatives have had long enough at it. Labour have had long enough at it. And they're not really moved it forward. So the appeal of a new insurgent party, Reform UK, making a real pitch for the female vote. It is seen as a bit blokey, isn't it? Let's be honest about it, if I asked you. Nigel Farage, corduroy trousers, tweed jacket, sitting in a pub with a pint of Spitfire. That is the sort of image. Preferably with a cigarette on the go if he's in the garden. Not hugely appealing necessarily to women. Well, they tried to turn it round, but did they succeed? Shivani Sharma, LBC's reporter, is now joining us from London Waterloo Station to give us the story and to get in and among some female commuters. Shivani, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. It was Blair's Babes, Cameron's Cuties and now Farage's Fillies who say they're sticking up for vigilante mums who've had enough of the rape and sexual assault of women and girls going unsolved, particularly by men coming over across the channel in small boat crossings. Now, Sarah Pochin, who's the only female Reform UK MP, has taken particular issue with men coming from Afghanistan. She says they're three times more likely to commit rape and sexual assault than men born in this country.
The culture of men from predominantly Muslim countries like Afghanistan is one that holds a medieval view of women's rights. It is fundamentally alien to the centuries of progress made by our own Western culture and attitudes. Women are at risk from these men. Hundreds of young men who arrive in this country, housed in our communities, who undoubtedly become sexually frustrated, have a warped view of their right to sexually assault women.
Now, Lyndon Kemkaran is a Kent County Councillor for the Reform Party, and she says the women there feel this issue particularly acutely.
My residents in Kent are beyond furious. Kent is a proud and ancient county, and our motto is Invicta, which means unconquered, undefeated, or invincible. The irony of our shores being invaded day after day by men who have fled the safe country of France to come to the UK by choice is not lost on my residents. How many rapes is too many? How many sexual assaults is too many? When is this government going to wake up to the reality of what so many women and girls are experiencing?
Now, some polling has suggested that Reform are starting to make some gains amongst female voters. But I have to say, the women and mothers I've been speaking to at Waterloo Station in London this morning don't seem to agree with the comments made about women not feeling safe.
I mean, I feel quite safe in London. I mean, all my experience of going around, I've never been threatened, I've never been approached. So, I mean, I understand some areas you have got large immigrants, large amounts of immigrants, and I can understand if it's a male-dominated environment, people don't feel safe. But I've never experienced that, so I can only speak for myself.
I feel quite safe. Living in London, walking around at night even, yeah, I feel safe.
Obviously, I feel safe all the time. So it all depends how you act. If you're friendly with people, maybe they will be friendly with you.
Do you agree with those comments that women, you know, don't feel safe in London or in the UK anymore?
No, I don't at all. London's always been a city of diversity. It remains a city of diversity, and that's one of its strengths. But I'm always amazed people vote for reform. There's people who like them to say that. I don't.
Do you think any women will be buying into this? Apparently in polling, they're starting to do better with some women. Do you think this is getting through to them at all?
No, not at all. I think reform's a male party, and I think it'll remain that.
So clearly, based on the women I've spoken to this morning, not all of them agree that they're in danger, particularly because of small boat crossings.
Shivani Sharma reporting 10 after 7. Let's get to Samantha Smith, who's a columnist, written for the Catholic Herald, The Spectator and the Daily Mail. How much appeal does the message, or indeed Reform UK, have to you as a woman? Samantha, good morning. You can't hear me, or you're not. Well, let's move on. Dr. Charlotte Proudman is a human rights barrister and director of Right to Equality, an organisation working to remove sexist inequalities from law. An overview of the message from Reform UK in your view, Doctor. Good morning.
Good morning. I mean, we know that rape and the sexual assault of women is primarily performed by men in this country who are British, not by migrants. And I'm concerned that this is feeding a racist stereotype that somehow we should be so concerned by migrants arriving in this country because apparently they're going to attack women rather than focusing on the risk, which is predominantly within women's homes. We know that the homes are actually the most dangerous place. Women are most likely to suffer domestic abuse, rape, and sexual violence. Just recently, there was a report in the press that a candidate for reform, who's also a teacher, had racially abused his adopted children, along with his partner, who was also a judge and a barrister. And yet those individuals were to remain nameless, according to the court, who said they should be anonymous. So I think we should be looking at those individuals sometimes who actually are candidates for reform and are working within the Reform Party itself, who may hold sexist and misogynistic attitudes and may even also be racist.
But, Doctor, some of the figures that were put out by Reform yesterday show that foreigners are, pro rata, 3.5 times as likely to be arrested for sex offences as native Britons. We can't ignore that, can we?
Well, I don't even know where they're getting these statistics from. When we actually look at those individuals that are arrested, for example, for domestic abuse, it's predominantly white British men who are perpetrating violence against women and girls. And
Offences. We're not obviously talking domestic abuse here. We're talking about sexual offences. And Sarah Poachin says that these are figures because gathered from contacting police forces and services up and down the country. Now, I can't validate her work, but I have to take her word for it. So, again, I put to you, if it is 3.5 times more prolific, something has to be done, Doctor, surely.
I think anyone that's perpetrating sexual violence...
But why won't you accept something here? Why won't you accept something needs to be done about the migrants?
Because I don't think that it's predominantly migrants that are perpetrating
sexual
violence.
So that 3.5, you won't
violence.
Take that on board, you just decide
no,
to...
No, I strongly refute those figures because I know from my own work representing victims of rape and sexual violence that it's predominantly white British men that are perpetrating that in this country. That's not to say, of course, that migrants are not also responsible for gender-based violence. We see that it happens across races, across different economic backgrounds mm-hmm. and across different class structures as well. We know that it's something that affects all women from all walks of life and perpetrated by all men from all walks of life.
I will end it there, Dr. Proudman. Thank you, Charlotte Proudman. You're a human rights barrister and director of Right to Equality. I would argue that 3.5 is quite a telling number. 14 after 7. Let's try one last time. Samantha Smith, columnist. Let's see. Can you hear me now? Samantha, good morning.
Yes, Nick, I can.
Thanks for coming on the line. When you hear some of the policies and ideas being put forward by Reform UK, as a woman, how attracted do you feel to that party?
I wouldn't say that I'm attracted to reform as a party or an entity, but I think that we are remiss to ignore the fact that reform has addressed a gap in the political market for many people. They are speaking in frank and unfettered terms about issues that we have been seeing on our streets, that we have been worried about, that ordinary people have said in no uncertain terms, whether that be online, in person, or taking to the streets in various demonstrations. They have said that they care about these issues, and mainstream parties in within the 2-3 party system have ignored or failed to bring substantive action to address them.
And why is there that failure, as you class it, do you imagine, Samantha?
I don't think it's for a lack of good intentions. On the surface, at least, you know, having come from Telford and been sexually exploited and groomed myself, having seen firsthand the way that the structures and organisations in power will fail, turn a blind eye, or indeed silence and vilify victims of sexual abuse and sex crimes in this nation. It's less so a desire to actively suppress or belittle or you know, put in harm's way innocent women and children, and more so a corporate negligence and a corporate culture of indifference. There's this belief that in Britain we are part of a higher moral standard, and that anyone that crosses our borders also will adhere to those moral standards. And yet what we're seeing in recent cases is that that is not happening. There are undocumented migrants who are coming to this country through illegal means, specifically because they know that if they cross the border in a legal way, their identification would show that they were a known criminal, that they had had previous convictions for various, whether it's sex crimes or rape or domestic abuse or whatever else. It is a reality that this is occurring.
Samantha, I have enjoyed our conversation. I'm sorry, but time reasons, I've got to let you go there. Samantha Smith, you have, of course, now told everyone that you are a survivor of that Telford abuse. You're a columnist to be found writing for the Catholic Herald, Spectator and the Daily Mail. Women are at risk of rape by small boat migrants with warped views from medieval times. Don't get much more punchy than that, but is she right? 7:16, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Officials have warned England is suffering from nationally significant water shortages during another spell of hot weather. President Trump has again warned Kiev and Moscow will have to cede land to end the war in Ukraine. And the health secretary has told us resident doctors will not go on strike again this month. LBC weather, hot and sunny for most, a bit cloudier further north, a high of 34 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Queues of about 4 miles on the M25, anti-clockwise from junction 21 at the M1 to 20 at King's Langley. It's because a lorry has broken down and two of the four lanes are closed. Very busy on the A13 at westbound to the M25 junction, and that's all down to an accident. Also delays on the A40 eastbound from Park Royal to Gypsy Corner because of the ongoing works, where only one lane is open. In South Ruislip, Victoria Road stays closed both ways, and lengthy delays on the A1 southbound to Five Ways Corner, and that's because of the ongoing works. Stansted Express and Greater Anglia services via Tottenham Hale, they're running with some minor delays because of problems with the overhead wires.
This is LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was a dream that became a nightmare. High pressure sales tactics, huge site fee increases, and a loss of value have left many customers feeling misled, angry, and trapped. But the Holiday Park Advice Centre can help. Contact us today and we'll help claim back any money you're owed on your holiday home. Text ASSIST to 78900 to get started.
Hello, Holiday Park Advice Centre.
That's ASSIST to 78900.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Make the O2 your playground this summer. Test your football skills at Toka Social. Take to the skies at iFly indoor skydiving. Or challenge your friends at Boom Battle Bar. Let the kids burn off energy at Oxygen Active Play. Perfect your game at Paddle Social Club. Or test your reflexes in the world of Activate. There's something for everyone at the O2. Feeling hungry? Choose from over 30 bars and restaurants and discover flavors from around the world. Search Do More at the O2 to start planning your perfect day.
Chase is the digital bank that puts you first.
What does that mean?
Well, most people don't bank 9 to 5. That's why Chase customer support is available 24/7.
So I can contact them whenever works best for me.
You got it. You can chat to a real person through the app.
That's handy.
And you can always call up to speak with them directly.
Hello. Now we're talking.
Join the UK's number one bank for customer satisfaction. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents. Eligibility applies. Claim based on YouGov UK Banks and Building Society's rankings 2024. Verify at chase.co.uk/YouGov.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert. Nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:20. An inconvenient truth, or almost a dog whistle for racism. The data put forward by Reform UK that shows that people coming into this country are 3.5 times more likely to be involved in sexual crime than native or indigenous Britons. What action should be taken? Why is it that so many commentators, so many political parties just don't seem to want to confront that? Not for a moment am I suggesting we don't have problems with our own population. Of course we do, involved in all sorts of crime, whether it be domestic violence, sexual assault. Of course that goes on, regrettably. But that doesn't mean, short, or does it to you, mean we ignore this issue? Taking you quickly through the front pages, the Daily Mail. Well, that's another issue we're also going to be examining. A&E waits fuel 4,000 attacks on NHS staff a year. But that figure is shocking. I think probably even more shocking is that it's risen by 91% in 6 years. 91%. That's virtually doubled. As I said earlier, this is a country where you get attacked if you're a shop lifter, as they call it, shop thief, and someone puts a picture of you up there. That's a breach of your data. It does seem we're increasingly lawless. Daily Express talks about those 50,000 migrant boat arrivals since Labour got in. Do you remember they were going to smash the gangs? That's going pretty well, isn't it? The other big story, and we'll be looking at that in just a moment, is the possibility of inching towards some kind of deal as regards the Ukraine conflict. The Daily Telegraph, Kyiv ready to give up land for peace. And The Times, Trump, I will try to get Ukraine some land back. This is also in The Eye. Don't trust Putin, Starmer warns. Trump, Zelensky cut out of crunch Ukraine summit. It would appear to be fairly important that he was there as well. The LBC app has more on that story as well. Trump said, the LBC app saying Trump will try to get some prime Ukrainian territory back. And let's pick one other at random, which is the front page of The Independent, which has the photographs of those journalists, the five Al Jazeera journalists killed by Israeli forces while reporting from inside Gaza. That does seem to be a wholly unjustifiable act that they took, even if, as the IDF is claiming, and I'm saying claiming, even if it is true, the IDF is claiming that one of them was actually a Hamas organiser or member of Hamas or whatever it might be. You take out four innocent journalists to get him, even if he is a terrorist? Where's the proportionality of all of that? Right, we'll come to your views, but we can get some input on this idea of some form of deal with Ukraine. President Trump saying Ukraine must accept the redrawing of its borders to achieve peace, and he would try to get back some of the country's oceanfront property, his words not mine, from Russia during talks with President Putin in Alaska on Friday. Here is President Trump addressing ahead of that conference, his hopes for peace.
I believe he wants to get it over with. Now, I've said that a few times, and I've been disappointed because I'd have, like, a great call with him, and then missiles would be lobbed into Kiev or some other place, and you'd have 60 people laying on a road dying. I said, that's cold. But I think we'll have a constructive conversation because there'll be some land swapping going on. I know that through Russia and through conversations with everybody. To the good, for the good of Ukraine. Good stuff, not bad stuff. Also, some bad stuff for both. So there's good and there's bad.
Now, before Friday's summit, President Zelensky is expected to join a call of European leaders with Donald Trump tomorrow, offering him a last opportunity to plead Ukraine's case. Lisa Hasseldine is assistant online editor of The Spectator, who wrote last week, is Putin calling Trump's bluff on Ukraine? OK, we're a couple of days away, Lisa, but how do you possibly see Alaska playing out? Good morning.
Morning. Thank you for having me. To be perfectly honest, I don't see Alaska playing out well for Ukraine at all, not least because Ukraine isn't going to be there. It's just going to be a meeting between Trump and Putin. And given that from the very early days of the war, as Russia was advancing onto Ukrainian territory, Putin has always made clear that he wants to keep hold of Ukrainian territory. And from the very beginning of the war, Ukraine has said that it will not cede any territory, despite perhaps a last minute small softening from Zelensky potentially now. Those two positions don't marry up. So I think, particularly given how Trump is talking, it's going to be Ukraine that loses out, unfortunately, and not Russia.
Do you sense that Putin's willing to give?
I sense that it's going to be that Trump will give Putin, I think, most likely what he wants, and it will be Ukraine that loses out on the land that it says that it never wanted to give away in the first place.
But how then does Trump sell that into Zelensky and Ukraine, do you imagine?
We've seen how Trump has interacted with Zelensky since coming back into the White House. There was, of course, that sort of infamous Oval Office bust-up in February. So I think Trump will have no problem with doing his best to bully and cajole Zelensky. I think he will also try and use some emotional blackmail and saying, well, if you don't agree to this deal, you're the one who's carrying on this war, which, of course, is also a very difficult position for Zelensky to be in, not least because, of course, the continuation of the war is subjecting Ukrainians to constant bombardment from Russian missiles and drone attacks, as well as, of course, what's going on the front line. So I think it's going to get a little bit ugly, to be honest.
What, if anything, is the role the United Kingdom could play?
I think the role the United Kingdom can play is to support Ukraine, to make it very clear that particularly if Alaska on Friday doesn't go in a favourable direction for Ukraine, that Britain will stand behind it, provide it with any support that it needs, not least any military or sort of humanitarian aid it might need in the event that Russia could break a ceasefire or, in fact, basically disregard the terms of peace deal and relaunch the conflict after a period of rearmament. So I think for Ukraine, it'll be very important to hear from Britain that it stands behind Ukraine no matter what.
And do we have any intelligence on the relationship between the two men, Trump and Putin?
We know that they both like the idea of being a big global player. They both have quite big egos. And also, I think they're aware that they need to massage each other's egos, which is why we see a lot of the talk between sort of Trump and Putin, when they're both speaking to the media about each other, they talk in very flattering terms and they talk in very sort of optimistic terms about each other. What they're like behind closed doors, a lot harder to say, of course, but I think there's going to be perhaps, dare I say, a meeting of similar minds on Friday.
Lisa, thank you for your input. Lisa Hasseldine is assistant online editor of The Spectator. Wrote an article last week, is Putin calling Trump's bluff on Ukraine? I'm sure there will be plenty of build-up to that summit, which is still a couple of days away. Now let's come back to what happened yesterday here in the United Kingdom. Reform UK, with banners saying Women for Reform, and then paraded four women, Leila Cunningham, Dame Andrea Jenkins, Sarah Pochin, and the leader of Kent County Council, Lyndon Kemp-Callaghan. This is obviously as an attempt to show that they are appealing. It does have a sort of a bit of a blokey feel to it. And then we heard one of them, Sarah Pochin, their MP, their only female MP, women are at risk of rape by small boat migrants with warped views from medieval times. And then she put out figures saying that the small boat migrants, and these are her words, from predominantly Muslim countries put British women at risk of sexual assault and rape. And she cited figures that were published in January. Foreigners are pro rata 3.5 times as likely to be arrested for sex offences as the British. As any British person. This is what you're saying on social media. The doctor who came on should understand stats and proportionality. Yes, predominantly white men, because most men are white, still can be a high rate of offending by men of other ethnic backgrounds. Lewis in Essex. The end of the day, I'm sure we have enough British rape and sexual offenders to deal with without an influx of illegals that also have a high number of offenders and from cultures that do not hold the same morals as indigenous Brits. Martin in Derby, addressing the fact that a lot of people feel that this is a party that isn't really there for women, hence the Women for Reform banners yesterday. Martin in Derby, I don't understand women saying Reform is a male party. In my immediate family, I know for a fact both my mother-in-law and my wife would vote for reform tomorrow if there was an election. Jim says, would it be great if we looked after our women regardless of perceived narrative? Women being used again, it will soon transpire that women complaining are now deemed to be the wrong sort of woman. All right, we'll continue that conversation. Also, of course, in the aspect that they are having a very busy summer reform, and they're also having a fairly successful summer, if you judge them by the polls. Now, continuing the theme, sadly, of lawless London, we go to the London Underground. Footage from the moment commuters confronted a passenger who decided to drop his trousers and his underwear in a packed London Underground carriage last week.
He's got the train, mate. There's kids about it, mate.
Well, you both are,
Then an altercation breaks out. Commuters took the law into their own hands, and there was a fair amount of violence. British Transport Police, the naked man has since been detained under the Mental Health Act. British Transport Police are now seeking up to the four men who got involved. Are they chasing the right people? And talking about chasing people, now 9 out of 10 pharmacists have been involved in considerable what's called shoplifting or shop theft. Henry Gregg is chief executive of the National Pharmacy Association.
They give specific funding to GPs to make their premises more secure with modifications like CCTV and panic buttons, and we'd like to see that support also extended to pharmacists.
And we'll have more on that as well after the news. It's 7:30, you're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. The news is with Thomas Watts.
European leaders have agreed that Ukrainians must have the freedom to decide their future ahead of a Russia-US summit on Friday. The statement, agreed last night and published this morning, was endorsed by all EU states, excluding Hungary. Officials have warned England is now suffering from nationally significant water shortfalls. 5 parts of the country remain in drought, with 6 more in prolonged dry weather status, despite rain in July. And figures released in the last half hour show the UK's unemployment rate remained at 4.7% in the 3 months to June. That is the highest level since July 2021. LBC weather, hot and sunny for most, cloudier with a few showers further north, a high of 34 degrees.
This is LBC.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wickes kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wickes, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms and minimum spend apply.
At This Vet, me as the owner, surgeon, rota manager and puppy wrangler, and now she and her team are cybersecurity experts too.
Mia, someone tried accessing our system. Phishing scam. I blocked it.
BT Security Awareness Training turns your team into your first line of defence. Quick to set up from just £1.25 per user per month. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Thankfully, not just Mia's. Search BT Business Cybersecurity. T&Cs apply. Prices exclude VAT at 20%. 12-month minimum term applies.
A southern train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Right, we'll get your calls on about reform in just a moment. We always talk business. 7:33. Let's get to Kathleen Brooks, who's financial analyst and research director at the trading platform XTB. Some figures dropped around half an hour ago regarding unemployment. Kathleen, what were they? And then dissect them if you would. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, that was the unemployment rate. It stayed steady, actually, for last month at 4.7%, which is the highest level in 4 years, but it's actually historically still quite low. We've definitely got a cooling labour market, that's for sure. We got a decline in the number of payrolled employees, so the number of people on the payroll, essentially by 8,000. So that was a lot less than last month, and actually last month's figures were revised lower as well. So yes, we've got this cooling labour market, but it might not be as bad as expected. Wage growth did slow. though, and there's still a disparity between private sector wages, which are lower now than public sector wage growth. And of course, for both public sector and private sector workers, we've seen inflation rise. So our real pay is lower anyway.
Kathleen, the outrage that was expressed by the Conservatives and others at the hike of the national insurance and the concern that was expressed by bosses and other federations, will that be kicking in yet?
I think yes, definitely, because we have seen job losses in 10 out of the last 12 months. So this just kind of adds fuel to that fire that, yes, it's maybe not as bad as we thought it was, but it's still, you know, we're not an economy right now that is creating loads of jobs. We are still losing lots of jobs, albeit from a very high level. So you could argue, Labour, for example, could argue this is a bit of normalisation from post-COVID employment boom. But without a doubt, you're hearing from a lot of especially private sector companies saying that the national insurance rise is really impacting their hiring intentions.
All right. Skills Minister Baroness Jackie Smith, or Jackie Baroness Smith, will join us later in the hour to discuss some of that. Let's move on to other stories. And there's a hell of a toy story about the entertainer chain.
There really is. It's such a lovely story, Nick. So they're the biggest toy chain in the UK, and the owners, so it's family owned at the moment, but they're handing over control of the business to their 1,900 workers, which means that all the employees over time will get a share of the profits and a say in how the firm is run. So the owner, Gary Grant and his family, they will be rewarded. So they will receive a payout for their 100% shareholding, but that will happen over time. So it will happen alongside payouts to employees. And their accounts show that the business is in great financial health. So, you know, for last year, they made 6.7 million profits. And they've got no long debt, no long term debt either. So they've really had it's just very uplifting story.
What do they know that other, because you'll know better than I, so many other retailers are struggling because everyone's going online. What do you imagine is the entertainer offering that's working so well?
Well, it seems like they really invest in their employees, so their employees know what they're doing. And maybe when people go in to buy presents, or grandparents go in to get toys for grandchildren or something like that, they actually want someone who knows, well, actually, that's going to suit a 7-year-old, or that will suit a 9-year-old. But they've also got concessions in Tesco and Matalan. So I think that's been a real game changer for them. So wherever the footfall is, that's where you'll see the entertainer toys.
When Barclays talk about the lipstick effect and Oasis, what are they on about, Kathleen?
Yeah, so essentially it's affordable luxury. So when the economy's on a bit of a downturn, we obviously claw back our spending a bit, but we still want to treat ourselves in little ways. So essentially what it means is that shoppers are buying smaller, more luxurious treats. Maybe more women are doing this potentially. So they're buying the Dior lipstick, Nick, not the Dior bag. And actually Barclays said that their spending on health and beauty products, including these very expensive lipsticks, rose by 10% last month. So we really are treating ourselves to those affordable luxuries.
Quite right too. Which firm is warning of the drive to net zero?
Yeah, that would be Mercedes-Benz, which may come as a surprise to some people since a lot of their fleet is actually electric. But the head of Mercedes, so Ola Källenius, he's also the chair of the European Car Lobby Group. But he issued an absolute dire warning for the outlook for Europe's car manufacturers. He says there's a perfect storm out there. You've got Trump's tariffs. You've got real slowing demand for European luxury vehicles. And you've got the net zero pledges. So that will end production of diesel and petrol cars in the EU by 2035. So he said that's increased the chance of collapse for the entire industry. And he's really laying into the European Commission. He's criticising them for the ban on hydrocarbon vehicles, says that it's coming too quickly and that the market just isn't prepared and consumers aren't prepared for it because of lack of infrastructure for charging, but also the really high cost of electricity. So he's saying slow down a bit. He's not against EVs. You know, as I said, you know, Mercedes makes loads of them. But he thinks all these threats coming at once will require a different outlook from the EU, from the European Commission.
All right, and let's finish with who's been fixed by Netflix.
That would be Harry and Meghan. So they have defied their naysayers. They have signed a new deal with Netflix. It's probably more watered down. We don't know how much it's going to bag them.
Right.
It's only a first look deal, so it doesn't mean that Netflix actually has to take any of their content. And it's probably a lot less lucrative than the $100 million deal they signed before. Possibly because Meghan's As Ever lifestyle series, so it's coming out for a second season, but the first season wasn't that well received. It wasn't even in the top 300 Netflix shows, but it... They came out with a statement. It hasn't been confirmed by Netflix yet, so they're obviously very proud of it and happy to slam the naysayers.
All right, Kathleen, thanks for your input today. Kathleen Brooks, financial analyst and research director at the trading platform XTB. Now, if you've just joined us, we're talking about the appeal made by Reform UK. Women for Reform was the poster, the banners behind them, and they talked about the medieval views that are putting women in this country of fear of rape. Warped and medieval views, risk of rape by small boat migrants. Scots in West Hampstead, are they just trying to rabble-rouse here, or are they onto something in your view? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. I'm so conflicted about, you know, what Reform UK are saying, because I don't want to see all migrants demonised. I don't think they are demonising all migrants, but my view is that 50,000, I think you mentioned the number which are, of migrants who had come in over the last 6 months. And I don't think that's sustainable. I mean, Britain's got one of the highest population densities in Europe.
Hang on a second. It's 50,000 since Labour got into power. So just 50,000
since they came in. Sorry, thanks for correcting me.
Yeah,
I mean, what concerns me is, yes, there are masses of British men who are doing this. But we don't want to add to the country's problems by having people who don't share our values, necessarily share our values, coming in. That's my big concern, and I think we've got to get the whole thing under control. And
why do the established political parties shy away from this, Scott?
It's the elephant in the room. It's like Brexit. You know, the downside of Brexit, you know, was the elephant in the room for so long that people didn't want to talk about the negative aspects, and I think that's what's happening. And I think that Keir Starmer, the Labour Party, and all the political parties don't want to talk about this because it's potentially divisive, you know. I mean, you know, who was it that said that, you know, there's an invasion coming in? I mean, and
yes,
that's the kind of language that Reform UK, I think it was Suella Braverman, wasn't it?
I think she did use, and we have to be very careful. Words can be very powerful things. So words such as invasion, because that normally implies a hostile army. But Scott, thank you for getting involved, and we'll have more calls on that. Now, to keep the idea of lawless Britain going, there was an extraordinary incident on the London Underground, in which one passenger suddenly decided to drop both his trousers and his underwear, and then seemed to want to put a belt around his neck. Other passengers intervened. Here with all the details, and I should tell you that you can see the video on the LBC app. Obviously, you won't see anything inappropriate, but it does a good degree of violence. And to comment on it, you probably will need to see it, because now it's a key as to whether the people who are involved went too far. Check it out on the LBC app. And then Henry Riley, LBC's reporter, gives us a story. Henry, good morning.
Morning, Nick. It was on Thursday afternoon at around 3:30 that a man on the tube dropped his trousers in front of a carriage of passengers. It happened on the District Line in East London between Upton Park and East Ham. Now, the video was shared widely online. The man was yelling. He'd also placed, as you referenced, a belt around his neck before then dropping his trousers and underwear. It's referenced by passengers that there are both women and children on the tube. The video showed that when challenged by a passenger, the man repeatedly swore at him, and then up to four passengers appeared to lunge at the man after he refused to pull up his trousers.
Yo! Yo, you need to get your f***ing shirt off! You need to get your f***ing off! You need to get your f***ing off! You need to get your f***ing train, mate! There's f***ing kids about, man!
Right, let's go. You want to go back
and help you? Hold up, you
A group of commuters then get the man off the tube after detaining him on the carriage floor. There's some kicking, punching, dragging him off with his hands behind his back. He was later arrested by an off-duty police officer after passengers alerted London Underground staff. Then he was detained under the Mental Health Act. Police have appealed for witnesses and are now investigating whether the passengers who confronted and pinned down the man have committed a criminal offence. It's understood they're being investigated for a fray. I spoke earlier with Susan Hall, the deputy chair of the London Assembly Police and Crime Committee, and she told me earlier that people should be able to intervene.
Do you know what? No wonder people stand back and don't get involved. And this is precisely why I do accept that perhaps they were a bit strong-armed. However, somebody was standing there with no clothes on, young children around. I don't know about you, Henry, I travel on the tube a lot, and the behaviour of people on the tube is getting worse and worse. So to a great extent, I say good on those men for actually standing up and saying enough is enough.
Lastly, Nick, in a statement, the British Transport Police said the man had been assaulted by a number of other passengers and was initially arrested by an off-duty officer before being detained under the Mental Health Act. They add that he was taken to hospital and an investigation is ongoing.
Henry Riley reporting. I think if you study the video, and for me, it is rather violent. There's nothing inappropriate. Obviously, you don't see the man's genitals, but I think it probably does cross the line from just trying to stop this man from parading around in front of women and children to actually giving him a bit of a kicking. Dan's in Regent's Park. Have you seen the video, Dan? Morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. I've seen most of the video. I mean, first of all, I wouldn't have thought I'd find myself agreeing with Susan Hall over something, but I actually do. And I think we need to be very careful as to how we report this story in terms of we often talk about the fact that no one stands up in society and confronts wrongdoing.
Yep.
And the first opportunity that we have where some people have confronted wrongdoing, albeit probably with the current political narrative about society, they've done it in possibly slightly harsh circumstances. If we start to criticise these people for doing the right thing and talk about an investigation too heavily, we're just going to slip back into a situation where everybody just turns their head, and that is not a good place for society to be.
You don't think, I'm with you, but you don't think one or two of the lads just pile in because they see a ruck?
I mean, you could argue that that's a possibility, but also if they've got to a point where they think, yeah, do you know what, enough is enough and this is inappropriate behaviour, the difference for them against people that perhaps, you know, have to enforce law and order all the time is, you know, their view of self-restraint and their ability to restrain themselves and think about their liabilities is not going to be particularly good, and it's going to be clouded by their emotions.
Grateful for your input. Dan, thank you. Let's get some of the social media going on this. This is Chris in Midhurst. The police are looking to arrest the commuters. This is exactly why this country is shot through. Tony says, well done to the lads who gave that... Well, let's change that word because we don't know his middle. Gave that man a kicking. Let's not see his mental health issues. Let's go carefully. Junior says, we have laws in society. The guy's clearly has mental issues. Heavy-handed isn't good on the people, according to her. So there's a bit of a mixed view. Check it out. I say, as long as you don't mind... A little bit of violence, I'm afraid, on the LBC app. Did they actually cross the line? There are four of them. The guy is restrained. Are a couple of them piling in? Or is it, as Dan says, people moan all the time. No one ever stands up. Someone actually did. I'll take your views on that. Plus, later in the show...
The tenants of a block of flats in London, which has been swarmed by rats, say it's a living nightmare. I'm LBC's Helen Hodnot with the exclusive.
Now, if you're a little bit squeamish around rats, as I am, I don't like rats. I mean, obviously I'm not going to run away, but you have never seen so many rats in your life. You would think it was created for a horror movie. The video is absolutely shocking, and it's on the LBC app. Obviously, again, prior to discussing that, and Helen's report, it would help if you saw it. So that's also on the LBC app. We've got to 7:47, jumbo time. Let's get those news headlines on LBC. Thomas Watts.
The US has again warned that Kiev and Moscow will have to cede land to end the war in Ukraine. Officials say England's now suffering from nationally significant water shortfalls, and unemployment remained at 4.7% in the 3 months to June. That's the highest level in 4 years. LBC weather, hot and sunny for most, a high of 34 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are now delays of about 5 miles on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 21A at the A405 to Junction 20 at King's Langley. It's because a lorry's broken down and two of the four lanes are closed. Still very slow on the A13 westbound to the M25 junction, and that's all down to an accident. Long delays on the A40 eastbound from Park Royal to Gypsy Corner, and that's all down to the roadworks where only one lane's open. In South Ruislip, Victoria Road stays closed in both directions, and that's because of an accident. In central London, Bloomsbury Way is closed eastbound from New Oxford Street to Bloomsbury Square because of an ongoing police investigation.
LBC.
This week on Morrison's Market Street, our weekly specials are packed with showstoppers. Save a third on juicy beef silverside, now £11.33 a kilo. A and our fresh salmon fillet, now £15 a kilo. Go on, treat the family to a flavour-packed dinner that feels fancy but doesn't cost the earth. Fresh from Market Street. Majority of stores subject to availability excludes online and Morrison's. Daily salmon was £23 per kilo, beef was £17 per kilo, and 17th of August.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips for the football?
Your best bet is to head over to BetVictor. They're giving new customers a terrific welcome offer. If you bet a minimum of £10, they'll give you £30 in free bets.
Full, that's a steal of a deal.
It's a good darn deal that'll make you squeal for real. Neil?
My name's not Neil.
I know, but it rhymes.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on the football at BetVictor. 18 plus, opt in and bet on any football marketing at odds of evens or greater. No cash out, 7-day expiry, terms and conditions apply. Gambleaware.org.
Calling all little explorers. The hunt for squishmallows is on. Who will your little one find in their Happy Meal? Would they chill out with Cam on the beach? Or rock on with Hallie? Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 25th of August, from 11 a.m, Squishmallows comprise toys only. Subject to availability. Fair ordering policy applies.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes. Smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert. Nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
With over 50 years experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools, and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions, or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
We'll come back to our conversation concerning the passenger on the tube. British Transport Police now seeking four men and the level of violence that was put against him. But let's move to other stories and the news that tens of thousands of future workers in careers such as roofing, electrical, carpentry, bricklayers will be trained up in high-demand construction skills by 2029 following an investment in new technical excellent colleges. And here to describe more is former Home Secretary, Labour Peer and Skills Minister, Baroness, or Jackie Baroness Smith. Good to have you on. Thank you to have you. Good to have you, Baroness. When does it start? How much will it cost? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, the colleges will be up and running from this September. It's a £100 million investment. And as you say, these are colleges, one in every region, that will be training up the young people and those who need skills during the course of their careers to work in our construction industry. The Office for National Statistics reckons there are about 35,000 vacancies in the construction industry at the moment. Those are jobs, good jobs, that could be filled by young people in this country. Too often, I think we've seen employers turning overseas in order to bring people into the country. But by the investment that we're putting in, not only through these colleges, but also other investment into apprenticeships, into skills boot camps, into shorter courses, we're going to be making sure that those opportunities are available to young people in this country. And that, of course, is also enormously important for us to be able to meet the target to build 1.5 million new homes for people to be able to live in.
So when will the chippies and the sparks, when will they actually be online? When can they pick up tools and start working, Minister?
Well, they can start in terms of the colleges from this September.
But actually be available to employers to start building
Well, we're already seeing, because of some of the changes we've already made to apprenticeships and to skills boot camps, we're already seeing people, as a result of government investment, going into the construction industry. The people that are training in the colleges, well, we expect 10,000 per year from this September, and that will mean an additional 60,000 from the Chancellor's investment, 40,000 new learners from the colleges that are that we're announcing today. And those are also colleges that will be able to make sure that other training providers, other colleges, have got the best learning facilities, they've got the best curriculum, they've got the best teachers, because we've had a challenge getting construction teachers into our colleges as well. And we're tackling it through the investment and the change that we're making to ensure that the expertise is there in our colleges.
Minister, we're discussing this on the morning that figures were released showing the jobless rate remains at a four-year high and job vacancies have dropped by 44,000 over the 3 months to July to 718,000. That's the lowest number of job openings since April 2021. What is the government going to do about what's called cooling in the labour market?
Well, we have seen 380,000 new jobs since we came into government. And of course, we're seeing some encouraging signs in the economy. We were the fastest growing economy in the G7 in the first quarter of
very small growth, though, Minister, to be honest about it.
Well, it is slow.
Snail-like pace.
It's encouraging, I think, Nick, and important. And of course, in things like the plans that we have for building new homes, we're creating that boost in the economy, as well as ensuring that people will have those homes and that there will be the skills there in order to be able to fill them. We're also seeing the numbers of people who have been inactive falling because, you know, particularly when it comes to young people, we've had nearly a million young people who are not earning or learning. We're beginning to see the numbers of people who are just not even engaging with the labour market coming down. Interestingly, in the short term, that means that unemployment goes up as they begin to look for jobs. But that's good because that's people who can then help us to build the economy and fill the vacancies that there are.
OK. How's the policy of smashing the gangs going? As it's now 50,000 people have arrived here since Labour came to power.
Yeah, and it's a very big challenge. But I think the action that the government has taken over the last year, where we've seen the doubling of asylum cases being determined, where we've seen increased numbers of people being returned overseas, where we've seen the development.
But how many of those are asylum seekers, those people you say that have been returned overseas?
Some of them will be, well, they won't be asylum seekers because they'll have had their asylum determined in the increased capacity that there is.
But how many of those will have then made abortive trips across the channel? That's the point I'm driving at.
Well, quite a lot of people that come across the channel do get to have their asylum determined and are then able to stay in the country. But the new scheme that we have with France, for example, means that where somebody doesn't have a right to stay, we can quickly return them to France. And we've already detained the first group of people who are illegal immigrants into the country and we'll be able to return them to France. We've increased the numbers of guards at the border. We've increased the numbers of people who are able to work through the National Crime Agency to get to the criminals that are responsible for this trade in the first place. And we've begun to make some important arrests of those criminals as well.
If we're talking criminals, as a former Home Secretary, would you describe shoplifters as scumbags, Minister?
I'm not sure as a minister or in fact as anybody, I'd describe anybody as scumbags. But
Alex Davis-Jones, your colleague, did. The victims...
They're certainly criminals and, you know, they have been... there has been a failure, I think, to recognise that shoplifting is not some sort of victimless crime, but is a crime...
Well, Alex Davis-Jones says shoplifting has got out of hand. Sorry to talk over you. Is she right when she says that?
Yeah, she is right. It did get out of hand. And that's why we need the additional police officers that we're investing in.
Oh, that's past tense, Minister. So it did get out. So it's not out of hand now.
I think there is too much shoplifting, Nick. And that's why we need the changes that this government is making to investing in neighbourhood policing, to ensuring that there is a focus put on shoplifting, which came off it in previous years. The police weren't taking it as seriously as they should have done. And we're seeing organised criminals as well in shoplifting who need to be tackled. So, yes, it is a serious problem and it needs to be addressed.
But what do we make of the Information Commissioner's Office telling shop owners, business owners, they cannot put up pictures of suspected shoplifters as it breaches theirs, the suspects, data requirements? Well, that's nonsense.
I'm less interested in the rights of shoplifters and more interested in tackling the crime, to be perfectly frank, Nick. But I'm not responsible for what the Information Commissioner says. Rightly, the Information Commissioner is independent.
But you would support if, for instance, you were running a pharmacy, and you're probably aware that, sadly, pharmacies are really being targeted at this time, by return, that they might want to put up posters of someone who's continually coming in and robbing them of their drugs.
I'd certainly want to make sure that my staff knew that there was somebody that was coming in and nicking stuff from my shop. Yes, of course I would. But I'd also want the police to be taking that seriously. And I can understand the frustrations of shop owners trying to do the right thing for their communities and people coming in and nicking their stuff. It's unacceptable.
Lastly, as a very prominent politician who is also a woman, when you hear Reform UK say, and I quote, women are at risk of rape by small boat migrants with warped views, then going on to speak about medieval views as well, do you concur?
Well, whoever it is who's responsible for unacceptable levels of rape and sexual assault, where I agree with Reform is that we need to take action. That's why, as a government, we've got a pledge to halve violence against women and girls over the next 10 years. Where I take issue with Reform is that whilst we're, for example, taking through the Police and Crime Bill with additional powers in it to help to protect women, Reform voted against it. So you can point at the problem, but unless you're willing to take action, as this government is, you're not really serious about actually tackling it.
But lastly, Minister, I think they would point to the problem being the small boat migrants. Is she right? Is Reform right to single those people out?
No, I don't think they're right to single those people out. They're a problem for all the reasons that we've talked about. But I think that there are, you know, unfortunately, there are too many largely men who are responsible for violence against women of all types. And that's why we need to take the sort of action that this government is taking. And it's why I hope Reform will change their position and actually support us in the tough legislation that we're bringing forward to tackle that violence. And also, of course, to ensure that we have more police on our streets, which we're beginning to deliver, reinvigorating our neighbourhood policing teams, making sure that we've got the criminal justice system that will be on the side of victims and help to reduce this problem.
You can read more about the announcement from Baroness Smith on the LBC app. Tens of thousands of bricklayers, carpenters, roofers and electricians on the way. Grateful to you. Thank you. Baroness Smith, Skills Minister, appearing here on LBC. Taking us to 8 o'clock. News headlines are next.
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, European leaders have stressed Ukraine must be able to decide its future ahead of a crunch summit. The statement, agreed by all EU countries except Hungary, comes ahead of Donald Trump's talks with Vladimir Putin in Alaska on Friday. It remains unclear whether Ukraine will have any involvement. The Spectator's Lisa Hazeldine has told Nick Kyiv is likely to lose out.
I don't see Alaska playing out well for Ukraine at all, not least because Ukraine isn't going to be there. It's just going to be a meeting between Trump and Putin. Putin has always made clear that he wants to keep hold of Ukrainian territory. And from the very beginning of the war, Ukraine has said that it will not cede any territory, despite perhaps a last minute small softening from Zelensky potentially.
The Skills Minister, Baroness Smith, has told Nick that tackling illegal migration remains a very big challenge. The number of people who've arrived in the UK on small boats under the Labour government could pass 50,000 today. England is facing a nationally significant water shortfall as a result of the prolonged dry weather. Officials say there are widespread issues linked to drought, including lower crop yields and the risk of wildfires. Amber heat health alerts will kick in across southern England this morning. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has told LBC that the jury is out on pay talks with resident doctors in England, but he's welcomed the British Medical Association's decision to hold off on further industrial action in August.
Now, ultimately, it takes two to tango in a negotiation. But the fact that they are now willing to sit down and negotiate is a step in the right direction.
Does it feel a bit more positive?
I think the jury's out on where we'll get to by early September. Those discussions are underway.
Members of the union walked out for 5 days at the end of July. The BMA says it wants Mr. Streeting to make a credible offer on pay to avoid further industrial action. The UK's jobless rate remained at a four-year high in the 3 months to June. Figures released this morning show unemployment was at 4.7%, reflecting another cooling in the jobs market. Pay growth, excluding bonuses, remained at 5% over the quarter. In the city, the FTSE 100 is just reopening at 91.29 after closing up 33 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, hot and sunny for most, cloudier with a few showers further north. A high of 34 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after eight, Tuesday, August the 12th. Our conversation about lawless Britain will continue. Wanted posters of shoplifters could breach data laws. Meanwhile, shoplifters or shop thieves are emptying pharmacy shelves as police do nothing. 9 out of 10 pharmacies have fallen victim. We'll look at that in more detail later in this hour. A shocking report about an epidemic of rats in a housing development in London. Toby Bacon is an expert in the field. He's from Essex-based pest control firm Town and Country Pests.
Certainly one of the worst cases I've seen, particularly in an urban environment. It is just wildly out of control.
Also wildly out of control, the number of attacks on nurses in NHS hospitals in A&E units, up 91% in just 6 years. Laura McSorley is a nurse at Queen's Medical Centre in Nottingham.
Recently I was spat at by a patient that I was trying to care for. It's an ongoing issue, so spitting, we've had punches thrown.
Plus, a conversation we've had before, how offensive is a statue? Another one now believed it should be on the move, that of Clive of India. Labour peer Thangam, now Baroness Debonair, told LBC...
The idea that in the 21st century we should pretend that the British rule over India for several centuries was an entirely benign thing and should be celebrated in this way.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Who would be a shopkeeper? We often ask who would be a shop worker in the supermarkets. But imagine being a shopkeeper, particularly if it's a small business, particularly if it's just one shop you might run, a clothes shop, or perhaps you have a couple of pharmacies. Now, I mentioned pharmacies because shop thieves or shoplifters are staging increasingly brazen raids on pharmacies and police are failing to help, according to the National Pharmacy Association. An 88% increase in the theft of drugs and other medical supplies in the last 12 months. 88% lift. Pharmacy owners talk of being left shocked by the lack of help from police and resorted to putting up photographs of burglars in their shop windows, wearing body cameras and hiring security guards at their own expense. Some footage is in one of the newspapers today, the Daily Telegraph. People just come in absolutely brazenly, fill their bags and coat pockets with products from pharmacy shelves and then walk out. In one example that the paper runs, a man is wielding a knife and threatens an employee to obtain cash as well. And of course, as the Pharmacy Association points out, if all these drugs are taken, presumably obviously they're sold on, then that means the people in those communities who actually need them, strong drugs, control pain or whatever it might be, well, obviously there are no supplies because they've all been stolen. Why aren't the police doing more? In the previous hour of the show, I put some of this to Skills Minister and former Home Secretary, Baroness Smith. I asked her how comfortable she was with shops being told that putting up the wanted posters, like I've just mentioned, actually now, in the views of one government department, is breaching data protection laws.
I'm less interested in the rights of shoplifters and more interested in tackling the crime, to be perfectly frank, Nick. But I'm not responsible for what the Information Commissioner says. Rightly, the Information Commissioner is independent.
But you would support, if, for instance, you were running a pharmacy, and you're probably aware that, sadly, pharmacies are really being targeted at this time, by return, that they might want to put up posters of someone who's continually coming in and robbing them of their drugs.
I'd certainly want to make sure that my staff knew that there was somebody that was coming in and nicking stuff from my shop. Yes, of course I would. But I'd also want the police to be taking that seriously, and I can understand the frustrations of shop owners trying to do the right thing for their communities and people coming in and nicking their stuff. It's unacceptable.
Well, let's speak with a pharmacist. Atul Patel runs St George's Pharmacy in London. Joins me now. Thank you very much for coming on. How bad is the situation at your pharmacy?
It's getting worse. I've been in the trade for 33 years, and in the recent times, it's become so blatant. In the old days, people tried to conceal their theft. There'd be one item here and there. But now they basically just walk in while we're busy working. They'll swipe the shelf and go. We've had shelves swiped a number of occasions, and sometimes it's quite often the same people come back for a second shot or a third shot. And we have to put up with it. When we do challenge them, we've been told not to challenge these people, but the police don't do anything. By the time they even come round, it'd be about 3 hours later after the event, and they're not interested at all. We've given up. So we try and challenge them where we can, and at our own risk, I'm afraid. And we found in when we tackle these bags, goods that come from different places, not just us.
You say we've been told not to tackle these thieves. Who told you that?
The police. When we call them, when we told them what we've done, they said, no, you shouldn't challenge them. You should just leave it to us. And but, you know, when we put up with this on a weekly basis, we just get fed up. We just, you know, it's a lawless society at the moment, as far as shop theft is concerned.
You said weekly. Do you reckon, Mr. Patel, something is stolen from your store, or major amounts are stolen every week?
Yes, once a week, definitely, it's been stolen, so once a week.
And what are typically the products they go for, Mr. Patel?
So the kind of things is painkillers off the shelves, expensive items like impulse deodorants, things that could probably be sold on to fuel their drug habits, which is mostly the thefts that we take place in pharmacy.
And the NP, the National Pharmacy Association, is warning, of course, repercussion for local communities because prescription-only medicines such as opioids and others are sometimes targeted. How big an issue, how big a problem might that be?
Luckily with us, we haven't experienced that, but I know my colleagues have been attacked, pharmacies where they've just run into, because most pharmacies are open spaces where they can just walk around the counter. You can see the back of the dispensary. They run in and grab things and walk out. I've had a few of my colleagues have experienced this. So I'm touched with, we haven't had that, but I'm sure we're vulnerable just as much as they are.
What do you think the police should do? What do you think the government should do?
Well, I think the police should take more seriously theft of crime. I think they have this threshold that these people know. And in recent times, they know that when they go into shops, there's no repercussions on that. Even if they're caught, the judicial system, the punishment, because there's not enough space in prison, the punishment is, it's near on negligible for them. So there's no fear at all, and they blatantly come in. So I think increasing local police people on the streets would be great. Prosecutions up a bit more seriously, so they come in and actually do the prosecutions. We have video footage. We have their faces. And
the police have no interest.
No interest at all. On one occasion, I mean, we shouldn't have, but on one occasion we had one character who kept coming in on a weekly basis and just swiping shelves. We end up putting it onto social media, and that came to an end, which was great. But we didn't have to do all that. The police should be doing this.
Lastly, would you ever consider putting effectively wanted posters up in your pharmacy windows?
We have considered that. We would like to, yes. And certainly one of the things I'd like to do is circulate those pictures amongst the pharmacies in my area so that we're all aware of them.
Good luck with what you do. It's such a vital service. It's appalling you're being treated in this fashion. Atul Patel, thank you. Your pharmacy is St George's Pharmacy in London, 12 after 8. Listening to that is Katie Bourne, who's the Conservative Police and Crime Commissioner for Sussex, but is the national lead for business and retail crime. It does seem, particularly if we talk pharmacies, we have an almost epidemic on our hands. Commissioner, what's to be done? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. It is shocking, and hearing poor Mr. Patel, I really feel for him. My local business partnership, we include our pharmacies who come to the table. So if we have any local issues, we can deal with them. But this needs a real relentless focus. And it's all very well the government saying, well, we're giving you more police officers. But unless we follow this through the system, you heard what Mr. Patel said, if we don't have the deterrent there, and the criminal justice system itself picking this up, the police can do what they can, but nobody's actually being punished for this. So we're seeing the prolific offenders come back time and time again because there is no deterrent for them.
Commissioner, where are you on the idea of putting up these so-called wanted posters for repeat offenders?
Well, quite frankly, you know, it's shocking that that our poor retailers are having to resort to this.
They're not allowed to. That's the point, Commissioner. The Information Commissioner's Office, just give me one moment. The Information Commissioner's Office has said this may not be appropriate behaviour. You must only share personal information that's proportionate to achieve your purpose. Commissioner.
Mm. Well, you know, don't get me started on the Data Protection Act and everything. I think we should have a Data Sharing Act with protections because people hide behind it and stop doing vital things. But as far as reporting goes, we've introduced a platform, a software platform in Sussex called DISC, which has all the protections on it. And we let all our retailers and businesses and our rural businesses as well use this. And they
how does DISC work, Commissioner? Is that DISK or C on the end?
DISC. They can share pictures with the police directly on this, so they can actually.
That's a good idea. And our
business crime reduction partnerships use it as well, and they work very closely with the police, the community wardens, business wardens on the ground, and they can share that information. But again, we also have a one police officer who we pay for, who just goes after criminal behaviour orders and works very closely with the lawyers in order to put these behaviour orders in so that the prolific offenders actually do have some sort of deterrent.
Lastly, and you may not have data available, but do you understand that pharmacies are being targeted in Sussex as well? Is that a key concern?
Yes, it is, which is why they belong to our business crime partnership as well.
I see.
But, you know, I called for tagging of prolific offenders and the previous government had agreed to it, but we're going to kick off a pilot in Sussex because I'm fed up waiting. And see if we can do something about actually, you know, putting the onus back on these thieves. It's criminal.
Do you have the powers to proceed on a tagging policy without government support?
We're about to find out because I'm not going to wait any longer for this. It's ridiculous. You know, shop theft, bilking, dine and dash. We've seen an increase across the board, and this is a wider societal problem because there are no deterrents. People think they can get away with it.
Will you let us know what progress you make, Commissioner, with that? Because we'd be very interested for you if you are able to drive through a tagging initiative of sorts without government support, obviously, to see it launched and you know, possibly see how successful it might be. Katie Bourne, thank you. Enjoyed our time together. You're Conservative Police and Crime Commissioner for Sussex, and you're the national lead for this area of retail crime. Calls coming in, Carl, you'll be the first on that. But it's across the Atlantic as well. President Trump says, send in the National Guard.
In addition, I'm deploying the National Guard to help reestablish law, order, and public safety in Washington, D.C., and they're going to be allowed to do their job properly.
The Wild West of Washington, we'll get the truth on that. It's just turned 8:16, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
EU leaders have stressed Ukraine must be able to decide its future ahead of a crunch summit between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. The number of people who've arrived in the UK on small boats since the election could pass 50,000 today. And England is facing a nationally significant water shortfall as a result of the prolonged dry weather. Today will stay hot and sunny with a high of 34 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 22 at London Coney to 20 at King's Langley. It's because a lorry's broken down and two lanes are closed for recovery. Also, very slow on the A13 westbound up to the M25 junction following an accident. Long delays on the A40 eastbound from before Park Royal to Gypsy Corner. It's all down to the roadworks where only one lane is open. In South Ruislip, Victoria Road is closed both ways. That's all down to an accident. In central London, Bloomsbury Way stays closed eastbound from New Oxford Street to Bloomsbury Square. It's because of an ongoing investigation. And on the underground, there are minor delays on the Bakerloo line.
This is LBC.
Trying to Bedford with the crew for a music festival. Scenes!
Georgie, is this too much glitter?
Yep, lost them. God, I offered to get drinks on my own.
It's okay, find the flag with the DJ and Cat. Oh, there they are.
Back on the train, glitter gone, feet destroyed. Totally worth it. Oh, I can't wait to post this selfie of us. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save one third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
At This Vet, Mia is the owner, surgeon, rota manager and puppy wrangler. And now she and her team are cybersecurity experts too.
Mia, someone tried accessing our system. Phishing scam. I blocked it.
BT Security Awareness Training turns your team into your first line of defence. Quick to set up from just £1.25 per user per month. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Thankfully, not just Mia's. Search BT Business Cybersecurity. T&Cs apply. Prices exclude VAT at 20%. 12-month minimum term applies.
Hi, I'm Dr. Paul Abrahams, Principal Cosmetic Dentist at Smarmore Dental Care St. John's Wood. I refer my implant patients to Darwin and Tanner and consider them to be an extension of my fabulous team. I trust the team at Darwin and Tanner to help me give my patients the smile they've always wanted.
A team of dental experts second to none, armed with the very latest in dental implant knowledge, technology and techniques. Visit darwinandtanner.co.uk.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Truly shocking photographs in one of the newspapers. The brazen fashion in which this person comes in, wielding a knife, and then just clears shelves. I can't quite make out what it looks like. Those brightly coloured headache pills. I think it's difficult to tell. No one does anything. No police. Carl's in Sutton. Carl, what's the solution? Good morning, Carl.
Yeah, good morning.
Hello,
yeah.
Sir. You're on the radio. What are you going to tell me?
Yeah, well, I work in security. I've been in it for 30 years, but I work in the high end clothing side of shops.
Right.
I worked in Soho and where even in Soho, some guy casually walked in, picked up two garments of the rail, which is about £2,000. I've gone after him. We're not allowed to go after him, but this shop allows us to do it. We wrestled to the ground. He had my finger in his mouth. He took a big chunk out of it.
Oh.
And I had to put pressure on his eye for him to let go. But you see it all the time, even like they jump over the counters in Tesco's. And
yeah, I've seen
they've got no fear whatsoever. And I didn't really think about pharmacists, but it won't be before soon that they will actually be jumping. Because no one's going to do nothing, are they? Because obviously you've been told not to do nothing. Even insurance companies won't insure you.
The man who tried to bite your finger, or did bite something, what happened to him? Did he go before the courts?
Well, they're still looking for him. We've got CCTV. But when I got stabbed in the hospital, when I was security in the hospital, and that
what
was
were
going
those
to,
circumstances? What had happened?
Well,
there?
It was a patient at the start of COVID. He wanted to go out for a cigarette. Obviously, we didn't know about COVID. We've obviously wrestled him to the ground. The next minute, he picked up a pair of scissors from the side where a nurse has left it, stabbed me in the hand, and the court case is like, every time the court case would come up, he would disappear, and they just dropped the case after 4 years.
4 years ago?
Yeah, 4 years ago. I couldn't go on holiday, they said, because the court case is this month.
How many
then
years
every time,
have you said you were in security?
I've been doing it for over 30 years. I've noticed it's just gone mad.
How bad has it got? I mean, it's difficult to give a question, but
well, honestly, we've got a Greg's next door. And we've got a town radio. Greg's next door. Every morning, they're raiding the whole of Greg's. Just walk in, walk out. Walk in, walk out. It's just a normal thing now. Thieves know they're going to get away. It's like a burglar. You know, you just got to pull it online.
You got an idea how to solve this?
Yeah. I'd say that lady's idea was quite a good idea, tagging them.
Yeah. Well, they might be doing it down in Sussex. We'll have to see how they get
on. Yeah, that would be one. I don't know whether they'll
So break. Someone comes in your high-end fashion store today and they make off with a couple of jackets or blouses or whatever worth a grand. You're told, do not chase after them.
Yeah, there's not every company apart from one shop in Soho, I won't mention their name, but they allow you to get reasonable force. Because Because when they're in the store with something, even if they put it in their pocket, that's not theft. When they get past you, it's theft.
Oh, yes.
And they know that you're not going to chase after them.
Carl, thank you for the input. Michael's in Sunderland. Michael, what do you run? You have a business, is that right?
As a licensee, somebody runs a bar in a pub, the police will come round with paperwork of the people's photographs and tell us what they were, whether they were shoplifters, drug dealers, or any sort of criminals, or people who they were actually looking for. And we had a thing called a pub watch radio, which went straight to the police. And as soon as you press that radio and you say, right, this is there now, yes, or on CCTV, the police will either come round or they'd use the cameras around the city to follow them if they'd left the bar beforehand. Now, and also had the same in the shops, a shop watch, where people would prefer prolific shoplifters or violent towards the staff or whatever, you'd contact the police and they'd come. Because you had your own radio.
Just clarify, that is still going on, is it, this pub watch, Michael?
Yeah, we meet every 6 weeks.
It's been successful, has it?
Very successful, because also what happened was, we had a poster that you put on the window to know when you come in this bar, all the ladies knew you weren't getting spiked, they weren't anybody coming up to pester you.
Sorry, what did the sticker you put on your window, what would that say? Sorry, just so I can clarify.
This bar is protected by Pub Watch,
right,
and people knew Pub Watch was, you had the police watching you, all the staff knew what was going on.
And lastly, before this Pub Watch, and well done, I'm glad the initiative is working well for you in Sunderland, did you have a lot of problem with Dine and Dash, or just regular theft? What were the problems that you encountered?
Well, I had that in 2005,
right.
and I called the police, somebody ordered £250 worth of food and champagne, and when the police came, they actually says, oh, they called them the Neptune King. I went, what? He went, oh, yeah, he's noted for it. He gets expensive food. Yeah, they knew him, and I couldn't get anything done. And there was an off-duty police officer actually having a meeting with my son at the time to corroborate what I was saying, and nothing happened. They went, oh, you've got to take the, it's a public matter, not a police matter.
Well, I'm glad Pub Watch is working for you, Michael. Good luck, and thanks for the work you do up there. Providing nightlife for everyone. We'll come back to this conversation, but at 8:25, it's time to cross the Atlantic, where President Trump has said 800 National Guard troops will be deployed to Washington to rescue the city. Here's a little of what he said.
In addition, I'm deploying the National Guard to help reestablish law, order, and public safety in Washington, D.C., and they're going to be allowed to do their job properly. Our capital city has been overtaken by violent gangs and bloodthirsty criminals, roving mobs of wild youth, drugged-out maniacs and homeless people, and we're not going to let it happen anymore. We're not going to take it.
So what is the true picture in Washington? John Sopel is co-presenter of The News Agents and The News Agents USA, both, of course, global podcasts, and joins me now. And I can't think of anyone who's probably got a better knowledge of Washington than John, because we were there at the back end of last year for the election. And you have an encyclopedic knowledge of the city. How many years did you live there? John, morning to you.
Morning, Nick. Yeah, I lived there for nearly 8 years. And I've got to say that the description that Donald Trump gave there doesn't quite square with the reality of living in Washington. Look, the 8 years I lived there, I honestly never, ever once felt threatened by mugging or assault or robbery or theft or any of the things. I mean, you know, listening to your previous callers very articulately saying what they're going through is trying to keep law and order going in, you know, in Sunderland, in Sussex, etc. It was nothing like that in DC. But DC is cut into four quadrants. And Northwest Washington, where I live, where the diplomats live, where the lawyers live, where the well-to-do...
Is that where you and I went drinking in November then?
Exactly.
Right.
It is very, very well policed and you feel safe as houses. There are some parts which are much, much rougher, where there are carjackings, where there is gun crime. But Donald Trump has always held up these cities that are run by Democrats, like Washington, D.C., like LA, like San Francisco, as these kind of the American carnage. This is where terrible things happen. Mm. And so he has taken them over. I mean, there is a small irony, Nick, that, you know, the last time the National Guard had to be deployed in Washington, D.C. was on January the 6th, 2021, when there had been riots and there had been an attempt to take over the Congress by Donald Trump supporters who'd invited them to D.C. because it was going to be wild. And wild it was. So, look, there is, you know, I think what Donald Trump is trying to do is something political and saying cities have got out of control. It's because they're badly run Democrat cities. I'm going to take charge of them. I'm going to be the boss now. We are going to sort this out. And I think there will be a big move to kind of get rid of the homeless people in Washington. I mean, where you put them is another question.
But you and I are both journalists, so we reach for facts. Last year, the number of murders, rapes, robbery and aggravated assault in Washington fell to its lowest level in 30 years. Violent crime had spiked in 2023, but has dropped dramatically since and is down 26% this year. There's no backup to what the man said.
Nick, you're making the fatal mistake of letting the facts get in the way of a good story.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Donald Trump wants to tell a story that Democrat cities are badly run, out of control. The only way to pull this back is, you know, for him to show some muscle, do what he's done, do what he, you know, has done on the border, do it in the cities. There is an American chain of shops called Pottery Barn.
Oh, yeah.
And their famous slogan was, if you break it, you own it. In other words, Donald Trump will now own the law and order problem. And so if he's unable to show that law and order has been cracked in Washington, D.C., and, you know, you've cleared out all the tents of people living homelessly in the city, then it becomes Donald Trump's problem as well. And so there's a risk as well as a kind of opportunity for Donald Trump in saying this. But as you say, the facts as they are on the data that we've got suggest that the problem, I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, I left D.C. at the beginning of 2022. And, you know, during post-COVID, there was a spike in crime. There were sort of people roaming around. There were gun incidents in areas that you would never think it would happen. But it's come down again now. But, you know, Donald Trump is trying to tell a different political story rather than the real life story.
The one using like facts that you and I like to sometimes deploy. John, got to leave it there. Got to get to the news. You understand better than most. John Sopel, thank you. Co-presenter of the News Agents and the News Agents USA, both global podcasts. Salman, I understand you have a pharmacy and I'd like to talk to you, but can we possibly do it the other side of the news when I can give you a better run at it, as it were, because I want to hear your story in full. And we are coming to other stories back here in the UK. A prominent Labour peer calling for a statue of Clive of India to be removed. The peer is Baroness Thangam Debonair.
The idea that in the 21st century we should pretend that the British rule over India for several centuries was an entirely benign thing and should be celebrated in this way.
Can you get that exercised over a statue? We'll pick up that conversation after this. It's 8:30, Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. The news headlines are read by Thomas Watts.
Leaders of EU countries have stressed that Ukrainians must be able to decide their future ahead of a crunch summit. There are concerns about what could be decided between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin in Alaska on Friday. The Skills Minister, Baroness Smith, has told Nick it is not right to single out migrants for posing a threat to women's safety. Reform MP Sarah Pochin warned yesterday many asylum seekers have medieval views about women and girls. Britain's unemployment rate remained at a four-year high in the 3 months to June. Figures released this morning show it was at 4.7%, reflecting another cooling in the jobs market. LBC weather, hot and sunny for most, cloudier with a few showers further north, a high of 34 degrees.
This is LBC. Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Or total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Hurry, the Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss out on up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, you can still get £50 off your electric blind order, an easy way to control your blinds. But be quick, these offers end 26th of August. And if you find the same product with the same service for less, we'll match the price. Book your free in-home appointment today. Visit hillarys.co.uk. The Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss it. Conditions apply.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes, greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
8:32, we'll talk about a row over another statue in a moment, but Salman is in Mill Hill. Thank you for hanging on the line, and you have a pharmacy. Is that correct, Salman? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes,
hello,
I
sir.
Do. Hi. Yes, I do, and in my 40 years there, I've had guns, a gun put in my face, a knife stuck near my belly. But believe you me, I have never seen anything in that like what's happening in the last 3 years. We are absolutely inundated with it, and I've had to lock my front door now with a bell. Let people want it. Lots of obviously dissatisfied customers. I've got posters with their faces, because I've got I had to spend money on a very expensive CCTV system, electronic tags on the goods.
Salman, what are the sort of products they try to steal?
Expensive shampoos and cosmetics and moisturizers, mainly. And they come in with bags. One guy in front of the girls just removed a whole shelf full of expensive toothpaste and just walked out.
And what's your instruction to staff? What do you tell them to do?
Well, I tell them not to get involved, but I'm one of those old-fashioned, unfortunately, go-have-a-go heroes. So 2.5 years ago, I tackled somebody to the ground, and the police turned up. Within 15 minutes, I was still sitting on top of the guy, but they ended up telling me I shouldn't have got him in a chokehold, especially after what happened in America. Mm. And I had to put a plaster on the cut on his head and let him go. And nothing happened there.
So the police arrive and you're sitting on the guy who's tried to rob items from your store. You understandably put a bandage on his head, and then the police say, just let him go.
They didn't say let him go. I put that wrong. They said I have a choice. I can either take it further, but it could be that he might put a case against me for assault. Yeah. And obviously, I it cost me £300 a day to be in court.
How many pounds worth of goods you lose each year, or in total, or whatever, or is it not able to get to a figure?
No. I think industry figure is anything above 3% is a disaster. And believe me, with our margin with the NHS disaster, I would say something like 5% now. It has reduced drastically since I put up the posters and and locked the front door.
Mm-hmm.
But look, now look.
And lastly, the posters. What do the posters show?
No, I'm circumcised, so I'm not accusing. I'm just a person banned.
But do you put? Is there a picture of my face saying I'm banned, or is it just my name? How does it work?
No, I don't. You see, that's the trouble. I don't know their name. In order to ban a person, you need to write to him or to his address or names.
So what posters? Lastly, I don't understand. What posters are there then?
So it's the face of the person walking or coming into the shop and banned.
Right.
Banned on it. So I might be working a fine line. And funny enough, one of the gang came in 2 or 3 times and tore the poster off in front of the girls. What are you going to do about it?
Lord. And did you say someone put a gun in your stomach? Is that right?
Yeah, that was about 20 years ago. And emptied my controlled drug morphine cupboard.
Oh, my goodness. All right, Salman, thank you for giving us such detail. You look after yourself and all the team that works with you. Stay safe is the most important thing, but that is a graphic depiction of exactly what's going on, isn't it? And we'll have more on that in a moment. But how excited can you get about a statue? Remember, a few years ago, my goodness, we seemed to be debating whether statues should be pulled down almost on a weekly basis. Well, now a prominent Labour peer has called for a statue of Clive of India to be removed from its high-profile spot outside the Foreign Office in London. I speak of Thangam Now Baroness Debonair, and she told my LBC colleague Ali Miraj last night,
I would like it removed. I think it could be put in a museum where context could be given. I think there are plenty of other places it could be. But I think the idea that in the 21st century, we should pretend, and that statue is an act of pretense, that the British rule over India for several centuries was an entirely benign thing and should be celebrated in this way.
Well, let's bring to the conversation Dominic Selwood, who's an historian and author of Anatomy of a Nation, A History of British Identity in 50 Documents. Mr. Selwood joins me now. Okay, for those who don't know a lot of the history, what do we learn about Clive of India? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, Clive is a person who featured largely in Britain's colonial history. He, very quick recap, he went over to India as a young man aged about 18. He joined the East India Company's army. He rose very quickly to become prominent in that. He won many battles, and most importantly, he ended up governing an area of India. And building on that, the company ended up running about two-thirds of India. And when the company, which was incredibly corrupt and asset-stripped India, was finally shut down in 1857, Parliament nationalised the company and the Raj began and made Victoria Empress. And Clive really was the man who paved the way for that. So he is a figure who does feature in British history books for a reason, because he was very influential both in Britain and in India in that period.
And why is he such a controversial figure, Mr. Selwood?
Well, he and his ilk from the East India Company were known as nabobs or nobs when they came back. He was worth about 40 to 50 million. He enriched himself basically on India. They asset stripped India. They brought all the money back to England, you know, responsible for a lot of the wealth that Britain got from India. And that is highly controversial. And of course, a lot of it was gained on the battlefield through violence and through oppression. So I think, you know, Baroness Debonair is right to highlight that he is not a laudable character. But I think what also needs to be stressed is that there's no point pretending this wasn't part of Britain's history. And I don't think to acknowledge, confront, interact, engage with something, that means that one's praising it or holding it up as an example of something. Lots of these statues around London and around Britain tell important parts of our history. And I genuinely worry that if we remove them all, our history just doesn't get known. I mean, as it is, the statue is a talking point. It's an opportunity to discuss, you know, a difficult part of our history. I don't think that sticking it in a cupboard somewhere is the answer.
When Baroness Debonair says, quotes, "Before colonial rule, India was a very developed country. It understood free trade. It was trading with its neighbours, something the East India Company and the other colonising forces successfully crushed." Would history prove that to be true?
Post-colonial history and understanding and unpicking centuries of narratives is a highly complicated area. Yes, India was a developed country, and you know you can you know I think it's a complicated area to get into, right? And I don't think that's the reason why you would be hostile towards Clive of India. I think the real reasons for being hostile towards Clive of India are that he was, you know, the face of the really not impressive side of India of empire that today people you know rightly criticise. It really was not Britain's finest hour. But I don't think trying to base that on what India, you know, was before, during and after is necessarily the most helpful approach. The thing that one needs to look at is, what was Clive's role? What did he mean then? What does he mean now? And stress the fact it's important to keep talking about it.
Enjoyed our conversation, Dominic. Thank you. Dominic Selwood, historian, and wrote Anatomy of a Nation, A History of British Identity in 50 Documents. Now, I should tell you, the statue was done by the sculptor John Tweed, completed in 1912, so some years ago. Do we now judge that by today's standards? Ashish in Croydon. What would you say, Ashish? Good morning.
Well, I would say, yeah, hi, good morning. I would agree with Dominic Selwood that basically, you know, there was a lot of economic obviously the reasons why the British went to India. But what the Labour MP and what other people do not mention, because she says that everything in India was hunky-dory before the British came and India had free trade.
India was a very developed country. It understood free trade. It was trading with its neighbours.
She's talking talking economically. She's not talking about the oppression of the Hindu majority by the Mughal and Afghan rulers. Demolition of Hindu temples, forced conversions to Islam, and the abduction of women was routine in the 600 years of Muslim rule before the British came. So, this idea that everything was hunky-dory is wrong. And that's the reason why during the Indian Mutiny in 1857, there wasn't a India-wide rising against the British. The Sikhs stayed loyal to the British because they knew, they said, if we get rid of the British, my God, we don't want Mughal Muslim rule again. British rule, whatever oppression there was, it was more civilized. The British didn't go around demolishing Hindu temples, Hindus by force.
That's an interesting line to say, whatever oppression there was, it was civilized. Can you have civilized oppression, do you think?
Well, you can, because, you can. I mean,
right.
You can.
Tell me how that would work.
When you rule a country, obviously your main aim is economic. The British wanted money. Okay, but the British didn't, as a lot of Mughal and Afghan rulers classed the Hindu majority subjects of the empire as the enemies of God. Mm-hmm. They didn't demolish temples, forcibly convert Hindus, and abduct women. That's what you call barbaric colonialism, and that was a feature of life for India's Hindu majority for 600 years. The Sikh history is started, right. And obviously the tradition of Sikh history was a resistance against this Muslim rule.
Ashish, thank you. Of course, as with many historical events, there will be different ways to view it, and there will be people who want to challenge what you said, but I'm grateful for your input. Thank you. Let's come back to shop theft, something that's possibly easy and not quite as contentious or with historical repercussions. Hugh says the simple solution is for government to instruct police to arrest shop thieves and courts to sentence to, say, 5 years. Fumi in High Wycombe. Pharmacies, high street chains should employ vigilante groups to tackle crime in their shops because the police and government don't care. Vigilante is a word that would make me a little nervous. Stephen's in Huntingdon. Stephen, what can you tell me on this story? Good morning.
Hello, Nick.
Hello.
Back in the 90s, I ran a shop in Leicester.
Oh, yes.
The local community police officer, I don't think they exist anymore, but they brought in a cardboard policeman which invited shoplifters for a free ride to a police station, which we had by the door.
Right.
And that was far more useful a deterrent than our security guards.
What, just a static picture like that of a police officer?
Yeah, like a life-sized cardboard cutout of a police officer.
But they must have realised it was cardboard.
Well, they did, but I think it made people think as they walked in, maybe something triggered in their brain as they saw it.
How much of a problem was it? What was it? Did you say what sort of store was it? A supermarket?
It was a supermarket.
Right, okay.
They don't exist anymore, but...
The booze or the meat? What was it?
Back then, coffee, tuna... The same sort of things.
Tuna?
Tuna in the cans are expensive, so they go for the more expensive products.
Four cans of tuna cost about £3.50, don't they?
The place that we had, literally next door, there was a pub, and I remember popping in there. I was told that the shoplifters were selling our stuff in there. I went in there, and they had loads of bacon that these guys were selling in the pub.
God, how terrible. What was the company line? Don't get involved. Don't stop them. Let them run off with the tuna.
To be honest, back then, I don't really want to say too much. It was a bit different then.
Ah, right. You could detain them.
We couldn't, but we did sometimes.
What do you do now?
Getting back to the cardboard policeman, it worked really, really well, and then some bugger stole it.
I'm sorry about the outdoor language, but that is a classic, isn't it? The cardboard cutout was going great, but then someone nicked the police.
Yeah.
What do you do now?
I unblock drains now.
You're a plumber?
No. Don't ever confuse us drain men with plumbers. We're different.
Right.
Unblock drains.
What, okay, I don't want to offend anybody. Why would you be insulted that I suggested you were a plumber?
Oh, no, plumbers get insulted if they think that they're drain men.
Oh, I see. Yeah, there's a related conversation. If you work in drains, you'll have seen some rats, right?
Yes.
Ever been bitten by one?
No, never. Oh. Never.
Are you a bit wary of rats?
Well, I live on a narrowboat as well, so I see plenty of them along the riverside.
You've seen them all the time. I don't know if you've got access to our app. You won't have seen rats of this, Stephen. However long you've worked as a drain unblocker, you'll never have seen the sort of footage that's now available on that LBC app. Stephen, thank you. just hear them in the background. The number of rats involved in this building's internal pipework at flats in London, Hackney in London, will absolutely horrify you. It is not for the squeamish, I promise you. But check it out on the LBC app, and we'll have a conversation report after the 8:45 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
European leaders have stressed Ukraine must be able to decide its future ahead of a crunch summit between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. England is said to be facing a nationally significant water shortfall as a result of the prolonged dry weather. And the UK's jobless rate remained at a four-year high of 4.7% in the 3 months to June. LBC weather staying hot and sunny with a few showers further north, a high of 34 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Slightly better news now on the M25 anti-clockwise, just after Junction 21 at the M1. There are still delays after a lorry broke down, but at least it's now been recovered. It's busy back to Junction 22 at the London Coney exit. Also delays on the A1M northbound from Junction 4 at the A414 to Junction 6 at Welling, and that's because of an accident. In central London, Bloomsbury Way remains closed eastbound to New Oxford Street and Bloomsbury Square. It's because of an ongoing investigation, so all the buses that usually go that way are on diversion. On the train, Stansted Express and Greater Anglia services between Broxbourne and Stansted Mount Fitchett remain delayed by about 15 minutes. And on the underground, there are minor delays on the Bakerloo, Northern and Central lines.
This is LBC.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
But 9.13% fixed annual return with Cufflink. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest, property-backed from £500. Hard not to agree. Visit cufflink.com. That's Cufflink. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to auto-invest and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA. Visit cufflink.com for full T's and C's.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345-6060-973, LBC.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
The road stretches before you, but there's trouble ahead. Stationary cars. You're faced with the McDonald's side mission. Do you A, join the ever-growing queue, or B, take the next exit and treat yourself to a glorious Mackey's?
Detouring to McDonald's.
Start your side mission today.
Mickey could try to sell his car privately, or get it sold today with We Buy Any Car. He could spend days on end trying to sell to a bunch of time wasters. Or sell in a flash and head to the fun fair with the kids. Proper gutted. Or proper impressed. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com.
How are you looking so fresh?
It's my new Samsung Galaxy Watch 8. It's got this thing called Running Coach, which creates custom training plans just for me. Oh, and that's our cue to pick up the pace.
What? This isn't fast enough. No. Oh.
Smash your fitness goals with a new Galaxy Watch 8. Buy today at Samsung.com. Requires smartphone on Android 11 or above with the latest version of the Samsung Health app.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
9 minutes before nine, and I'm not overselling this. I have never seen video footage of rats like this. It is as if it's created by a horror movie. One of my colleagues is just playing that again. You just see them swarming this particular housing development. There they go, running up a wall. So that's half... this is the stuff of Hollywood. This is horrific. This is where people live. All right, so let's tell you more about it. So a block of flats in London, residents exclusively telling LBC a rat infestation in their building is like living with your worst phobia. I think that's underselling it. There's footage of a swarm of rodents scurrying through a hole in the ceiling of the bin room. Tenants say, I mean, it is absolutely a swarm. Tenants say they've been complaining for 12 months. A housing association, Notting Hill Genesis, didn't act until last month. And the walls of their homes are still plagued by rats. It is a nightmare. LBC's reporter Helen Hoddenott is at the property in Hackney, in East London, and joins us now with this exclusive report. Helen, good morning. I hope you've got Wellington boots on.
Good morning, Nick. No, I'm actually wearing open shoes, which is a bit scary. I'm worried about a rat scurrying over my foot while I'm here. This block of flats is just a stone's throw from the famous Broadway Market and about a 15-minute walk from Bethnal Green. The audio you're about to hear is from that video, which was filmed recently inside the bin room I'm outside of right now, which shows this swarm of rats squeezing one by one through a hole in the ceiling before scurrying deep inside the building. Now, residents have told me they've stopped going into their bin room because this is the rat epicenter. I'm just opening the gate to it now and going inside. The air in here is thick. It's kind of like a rotten milk smell. I was here on Friday and up in that hole in the ceiling, I saw scaly tails hanging down from that hole, and also a dead rat looking out with a beady eye under a takeaway box just over there. Tenants tell us the rodents spread to every wall and every ceiling of their homes. Samantha, whose name we've changed and words we've voiced, says she lies awake at night terrified.
You can hear them squealing, you can hear them running, and you can hear them scratching. And when they run across the ceiling, it sounds like there's 10 of them. And at first, it was just this side of the building and my next door neighbour. But all of the flats on the other side, they've scratched their way through there now as well. So they're literally, they've taken over the whole building.
Now, this block of flats is run by housing association Notting Hill Genesis, which manages the homes of 130,000 people in the capital. And last year, the government's social housing regulator found such serious failings in its running, it was graded as non-compliant, a status Notting Hill Genesis says they're working to improve. LBC has seen emails showing Samantha has been complaining about the rat infestation for a year.
I've told them email after email that I've not had a full night's sleep. I mean, imagine living with your worst phobia, being woken up by them and every wall scratching and squealing at night. It's honestly been like my worst nightmare. And I've said to them, it's affecting my health. It's affecting me physically, mentally.
And Nick, it's not just the mental torture of hearing the rats scurrying close to their heads in the walls when they're trying to sleep. They also have serious concerns about their health, living cheek by jowl with so many rodents. We showed Toby Bacon, a pest controller for Town and Country Pests, the footage of the rat infestation, who told us tenants have been seriously let down.
Certainly one of the worst cases I've seen, particularly in an urban environment. It is just wildly out of control. There's quite a high risk of humans contracting Viles disease, which is passed through rodent urine. This disease, if contracted and not dealt with sort of immediately after showing symptoms, will kill you. And yes, the other sort of aspect of it, you know, chewing through wires, this is also a fire risk, chewing through pipes, you know, there could be a potential flood.
Now, Nick, I'm leaving the dankness of that bin room now, but Notting Hill Genesis have apologised to residents but say they have initiated extensive pest control and prevention work.
Helen Hoddenott reporting, as I say. Check it out on the LBC app. You will never have seen rats like that, except in the movies. We come back to a different problem, that of shop theft. David's in Hampstead. David, extraordinary numbers, particularly for pharmacists. You've got a solution or way to make progress, it says here. What is it? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. It's such an important issue you're talking about, this one. It really is. I think everyone's experienced it. The solution, I mean, yes, people can argue the police and everything. The police are finite. They'll do their best. The justice system is terrible. They don't really sentence them. However, I find myself in shops all over the place, you know, throughout London. I mean, the last time this happened to me now was about a couple of weeks ago, not far from where you are, actually. I was at Tottenham Court Road.
Right.
And I walked in, I could see a woman who I'm like, well, she's clearly going to shoplift. You could just see anyone with, you know, half a brain and an eye can see someone's going to shoplift. She's shoplifting. She starts filling up her bag, filling up her coat, filling up whatever. And I thought, you know, enough's enough. I do this every time, to be honest. Went over to her. I said some choice words and said, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Grabbed her by, she had like a hood, grabbed her hood around my hand, dragged her over to the security guard. I said, empty your pocket. She's just taken a bunch of stuff. She had taken a bunch of stuff, kicked her out of the shop. Before I left the shop, I literally saw someone else doing it. Did exactly the same thing again. And I think anybody who's capable of doing so, I'm, you know, in my early 30s, I'm perfectly capable of doing that. And I think anybody who is capable of doing that just needs to do that. Everyone always thinks someone else will do it. Someone else will do it. Maybe someone else should. Why does no one do anything? And the truth of the matter is the law of the land, which, you know, is the law. It's very binary. Mm-hmm. And I think this is important that people know this. Section 3 of the Criminal Law Act allows you to use reasonable force. So obviously you're not going to start filling people in for shoplifting, but no. You know, you're grabbing them and you're taking to the front. And
what if they start to... Because we've got the case of this... I don't know if you've seen it, this man on the London Underground who takes his trousers and pants down. Now, I don't know if you've seen the video, David, but...
I have.
Have they... You have... Oh, very good. Have they gone beyond reasonable force, those four lads?
I mean, I'm not a judge. I'll tell you that if I was on that train, I would probably applaud those men. Well, would I have joined in? People can decide based on my comments. But I'm just saying that I think, you know, reasonable force, again, it is sort of subjective, but common law and Section 3 of the Criminal Law Act are two parts of the law that allow people to use reasonable force, and Section 3 allows people to do so to prevent crime. So dragging a shoplifter out of the shop, or if that man was doing what he was doing, and there's children on the train, like, it's disgusting, that man doing what he was doing, people used, I mean, in my opinion, it was fairly reasonable. And I don't
fairly
think...
I love that word, fairly reasonable.
Reasonable enough.
Reasonable, even though he's been stopped, he's been detained, and we're still piling in. By the way, I don't have any brief for him at all.
I mean, people were boxers around him as well, weren't they? But I think that, look, he could have done a lot more harm. There were children on that train.
I agree.
And you also have to think about when they had, let's say, grabbed him. You see the video, someone pushed him to the floor. If that man is still struggling, if that man, you can't see, is he trying to bite them? Is he trying to spit? Is he trying to kick? What's he trying to do?
Well, he was also offering violence, and he seemed to want some kind of a fight. But it's once you've got him sort of contained. But anyway, David, we've gone over. Thank you for your input, and well done for being robust enough to stand up to those sort of people. We might return to the conversation of the man on the tube, but definitely coming up after the news, a shocking rise. Lawless Britain continues. Nurses facing a 91% lift in violence in A&E units over just a small number of years. Plus... Government hopes that £100 million will fix the shortage of builders, carpenters, electricians, plumbers and everything else. But we'll be talking about how important those trades are and where you learnt your skills and how hopefully it set you up for life. Those stories and more follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, European leaders are stepping up pressure on Donald Trump to defend Ukraine's interests at a summit with Russia. A statement agreed by all EU states except Hungary says the Ukrainian people must have the freedom to decide their future. Mr. Trump used a news conference yesterday afternoon to suggest land swaps could be discussed in Alaska on Friday. Defence analyst Professor Michael Clark says it would have made interesting viewing in Moscow.
Putin now knows he doesn't really need to make any big concessions. The tone of President Trump's comments at the press conference were all pro-Putin. They were all in favour of the respect he feels for Putin. And yet again, he's gone back to being really critical of Zelensky.
Officials say England is facing nationally significant water shortfalls as five areas remain in drought. Amber heat health alerts are just kicking in across southern and central England with temperatures in the mid-30s expected. It means there could be travel disruption or increased demand on health and care services. A Labour minister has told Nick that Reform UK is not right to single out migrants for posing a threat to women's safety. Reform MP Sarah Pochin warned yesterday that asylum seekers arriving on small boats have medieval views towards women and girls. She claimed some are much more likely to be convicted of sexual offences than British people. The Skills Minister, Baroness Smith, says that won't help tackle the issue.
No, I don't think they're right to single those people out. They're a problem for all the reasons that we've talked about. But I think that there are, you know, unfortunately, there are too many largely men who are responsible for violence against women of all types. And that's why we need to take the sort of action that this government is taking.
The number of people who've arrived in the UK on small boats since Labour took office is set to pass 50,000. The latest Home Office figures are expected to be published later. The UK's jobless rate remained at a four-year high in the 3 months to June. Figures released this morning show unemployment was at 4.7%. That's reflecting another cooling in the jobs market. Pay growth, excluding bonuses, remained at 5% over the quarter. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago reopened at 91.29. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather hot and sunny for most places, cloudy with a few showers further north. A high of 34 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after nine, Tuesday, August the 12th. I'm afraid it's another part of lawless Britain, but now we go into our hospitals, we go into our A and E units, where attacks on nurses have risen by 91% in just 6 years. We'll look at that in more detail. Plus, we'll go back to a conversation I was having with the Skills Minister, Baroness Smith, talking about the need to create more jobs in the construction industry.
Those are jobs, good jobs, that could be filled by young people in this country. Too often, I think we've seen employers turning overseas in order to bring people into the country.
35,000 jobs, sparks, electricians, chippies, plumbers. Is that a trade that you learnt? Where did you learn it? And has it set you up for life? Goodness knows, if we're going to grow the economy, we need those sort of people. Plus, altercation on the London Underground. This is after a man dropped his trousers and his pants, then seemed to put the belt around his neck. It was in front of, you heard there, in front of women and children. So four young men intervened, wrestled him to the ground, and he was subsequently arrested. He has now been detained under the Mental Health Act. BTP, British Transport Police, are now seeking those four, possibly facing charges. Should they get charges, or should they get a medal?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
There is a theme, isn't there, developing through today's mornings, whether it's shop theft we've talked about, mobile phone snatches, that incident on the London Underground, epidemic of knife crime, 9 out of 10 pharmacies reporting drug thefts in the past year. Welcome to lawless Britain. It is extraordinary. And now even in our hospitals, in our A and E units, attacks on nurses there have almost doubled over the last 6 years. Incidents often involving patients frustrated at waiting so long for care. Oh, there's nothing better than if you've had to wait a few hours than punching a nurse, is there? Nurses have been spat at, punched, pinned up against a wall and even had a gun pointed at them and been threatened with having acid, according to statistics put out by the RCN, the Royal College of Nursing. Laura McSorley is a nurse at the Queen's Medical Centre in Nottingham. This is what she faced at work.
Recently I was spat at by a patient that I was trying to care for. It's an ongoing issue, so spitting, we've had punches thrown, people throw computers or take them off the desks, there's all sorts of violence. It is soul-destroying because it puts you off coming to work. You do build a resilience working in A&E, but we don't come to get attacked at work.
Sarah Tappy, a senior sister at an East London A&E, was punched in the head by a patient in a waiting room. She tells the Guardian newspaper the violence is awful. It's constant. Nurses, doctors, receptionists, none of us feel safe. And the newspaper speaks with others who've been in similar situations. Naomi Bennett is an independent registered nurse working both in the NHS and for healthcare agencies. Joins me now. Thank you very much for coming on, Ms. Bennett. How long have you been in nursing?
I trained to become a nurse in, I qualified in 2012, but prior to that I was a healthcare assistant.
So you've been in and around healthcare for 15 years, something like that, if not longer.
Yeah.
What have you seen over those, Naomi, if I may call you that, what have you seen over those 15 years?
Yeah, so for my own experience, when I worked in A&E as a healthcare assistant, I actually was racially abused by a family who didn't want a black nurse to look after their dad. And basically, they abused me in the department. They were shouting at me, like, you know, swearing, calling me names. And then I went to report it to the nurse in charge at the time, and you wouldn't believe it. They flipped the switch, and basically, I ended up being sacked for it. They said because.
Sorry, you ended up being dismissed for what exactly?
Yeah, they said because the patient's family didn't were withdrawing consent. They said I basically didn't do as I was told. I didn't do what I was supposed to. Like, I should have left. But basically, what the problem is, it's the institutional betrayal that comes when a nurse is attacked by a patient, you know, because, but it's important to note as well that black and overseas nurses are more likely to be assaulted, and that's how broken the system is. And, you know, and they're less likely to be protected and more likely to be blamed. And we're not just talking about violence. We're talking about a system that punishes the victim and protects the aggressors.
In what way are the aggressors protected, would you say?
Well, for example, we've got a couple of cases with Equality for Black Nurses at the moment, with one of the nurses who was working in a mental health facility. And basically, the patient beat him up, literally right. Beat him up against the wall, beat him up and pulled his glasses off. And when he reported it, the organisation basically accused him of not.
All right.
It just didn't make any sense.
Okay.
It doesn't make any sense. But they ended up sacking him, and this was an international nurse.
Okay. Are you a member of the RCN?
No, I'm not.
No, you're not. So the RCN analysis shows the number of patients who had to wait more than 12 hours has soared 20 times in 5-year period. How much, by the way, I'm not giving an excuse for criminal behaviour, racist behaviour or anything, but how much is the long waiting time a contributory factor, would you say?
So Nick, it's really important to note that it's a system, it's a symptom of a broken system. Overcrowded departments, unsafe staffing levels and chronic pressure create environments where stress spills over into hostility. Sadly, for black and ethnic minority nurses, this is made worse by racism and discrimination, which means they're more likely to be given the toughest shifts, less likely to be supported, and more likely to be blamed when things go wrong. Every nurse should be able to do their job without fear, fear of violence, fear of bullying or discrimination. But we need leadership that doesn't just condemn these behaviours, but actively dismantles a toxic culture that allows them to thrive. But this is just the tip of the iceberg, and it's a broken system.
Grateful for your input. Thank you, Naomi Bennett, independent registered nurse. We mentioned what's happening in Nottingham. We mentioned what's happening in East London. Let's go elsewhere. We go to South Mead Hospital in Bristol. The number of attacks on A&E staff there rising from 83 in 2019 to 152 last year. That's getting on for doubled. Then I'll take you to Manchester Royal Infirmary, where they've gone from 39 to 79 over the same period. So that is more than double. And then down to the Maidstone Hospital in Kent, they've gone from 13 to 89. Now, RCN analysis, as I was saying, shows the number of patients who've had to wait more than 12 hours soared 20-fold. Growing numbers of hospitals have hired more security staff, and now are issuing clinical staff with stab vests, body-worn videos, and more CCTV. Is that what you've witnessed in A&E? Now, it is a stressful time. I understand that. You're waiting there. You're concerned about yourself. You're concerned about a loved one. You're concerned about a friend that you've taken to A&E. And the wait is intolerable. We all know that. But what on earth is going to be achieved by deciding to attack a nurse? Rebecca Smith, the Director of System and Social Partnership at the NHS Confederation, says no one should have to face violence at work. It's totally unacceptable. These kinds of incidents not only have a huge impact on staff health and well-being, but also retention of staff as well as NHS services and patient experience. Let's pick up on what you're saying on social media on this. Alan says, you attack medical staff, you should be escorted out of the building, whatever health issues you've got. I'm fed up with people pandering to these people, just punishing by not attending to their medical needs. The only problem there is, Alan, they're an incredible breed of men and women who are prepared to look after us when we're ill. Are they just, even if someone's at death's door, they're not going to cart them out? Kieran says, NHS should mark all people who assault people in A&E and withdraw the service. Don't bite the hand that feeds them. Again, they're not going to do that, are they? Because if someone is ill, they're going to want to help. That's the sort of people that they are. Keith, when my late mother was in Bournemouth Hospital, two of the nurses were racially abused when I was in there. This needs to stop. OK, tell me the stories that you've got on this. Lastly, this comes in. Do remember to sign them. You didn't sign that one, so I won't read them. Here we go. This is a Mike. Lawless Britain, as you described it, is fueled by a top-to-bottom failure of a legal system that fails to address this behaviour. It's a green light behaved for this kind of behaviour. Remy says we must have zero tolerance to lawless crime. We must, as we all know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Let's use our common sense and not virtue signal how nice and considerate that we might be. OK, well, let's hear more of your experiences in these hospitals. So we've taken you around the country. Just lastly, the figures, just so that you have the figures to hand, it was 2,000. I mean, just that number is frightening enough, isn't it? 2,122 in 2019, 4,054 in 2024, some of which, by the way, some of which involve staff being threatened with a gun. NHS Protect has issued these annual figures for violence, harassment and abuse. They were running until 2016, and the most recent NHS staff survey, which was as recently as March, found one in seven workers, nearly 15%, had suffered physical violence from patients, their relatives or other members of the public in the previous year. All right, we'll pick up on your calls on that. Plus, in other news, as you've heard already, there is a £100 million injection into technical colleges. The government determined to find some 35,000 people who are needed. Jobs such as plumbing, electricians and carpenters. So are you on that particular trade? And that incident on the London Underground, where one passenger decided to remove his trousers and his pants. You can see it, by the way, on the LBC app. It is appropriate. There's nothing that you'd want to see. There's nothing inappropriate there. And then four people get involved. The man himself has been detained under the Mental Health Act. BTP, British Transport Police, are now seeking those other four men who effectively came to the aid of the passengers. They might even try and arrest them. Susan Hall is Deputy Chair of the London Assembly Police and Crime Committee. She told LBC...
Do you know what? No wonder people stand back and don't get involved. And this is precisely why I do accept that perhaps they were a bit strong-armed.
We'll have more on that as well. 9:15 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
European leaders have stressed Ukraine must be able to decide its future ahead of a crunch summit between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. England is said to be facing a nationally significant water shortfall as a result of the prolonged dry weather. And the UK's jobless rate remained at a four-year high of 4.7% in the 3 months to June. LBC weather staying hot and sunny with a few showers further north, a high of 34 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the M25, anti-clockwise from junction 22 at London Coney to 21 at the M1. Now, it was very busy after a lorry broke down, but now there's been an accident, so one lane is closed for recovery. One lane's also closed on the M3 southbound, just on for the M25 junction, and that's where a car has broken down. In Acton, long delays on the A40 eastbound up to Gypsy Corner. It's slow back past the Greenford flyover, and in South Ruislip, Victoria Road remains closed in both directions, and that's down to an accident. On the train, Southern services can't run between Uckfield and Crowborough. And on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Bakerloo, the Central, and also on the Northern Line.
This is LBC.
With a simple search on Get Your Guide, you can discover things to do around the world. You could find yourself on a romantic hot air balloon ride near Marrakesh, or on a bike tour through Amsterdam with three friends in tow. Wherever you're going, discover tours, tickets and attractions on Get Your Guide. Start planning today at getyourguide.co.uk. Unforgettable travel experiences.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it from your app store now.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wickes to design our new kitchen.
At Wickes, we have over 70 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000 to over £20,000. And with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms and minimum spend apply.
You sound happy.
I've just spotted tuna in the fridge, and it's got my name all over it.
Well, be careful. It's a long way up.
Relax. We're insured, aren't we?
Nope. That's not what I've heard.
Because you never know what little pickles will get themselves into. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Seriously, we're not insured.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Violence at any time is unacceptable. Violence to nurses while you're waiting in A&E, and I appreciate waiting beyond 12 hours. Can you imagine it? Your heart has to go out to people. They're worried as to their health. They're worried as to the health of their loved one, their friend that they brought in. But hitting a nurse or spitting at them is not going to achieve anything. Helena is in Pathos, but I understand you do live here in the United Kingdom. Is that right, Helen? Good morning.
Yep. Hello, good morning. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you so much for calling in. Sorry, there's a time slip. Tell me the point you want to make.
So my last role before I retired was I was deputy manager for quality and safety at one of London's major teaching hospitals. So it was my job to look at the incidents reports from when violence and aggression was committed against our staff. And I can honestly say, last July when I actually retired, most of the incidents were because we were dealing with people that had mental health issues that had come into various departments and obviously were not being treated by the mental health services because obviously they have their own issues. Now, I qualified in 1986. I worked in accident and emergency for many years at Charing Cross Hospital. And obviously, clinical staff are quite used to some form of aggression, especially if people are drunk or, you know, the weekend scene. And, you know, I've personally been vomited and punched. But it was occasionally, mostly weekends. But the incidents that I were looking at were regular. They became commonplace. We had to have posters placed all over various departments saying no place for aggression or, you know, please treat our staff well.
I'm going to interrupt, sorry, because there's a type sign. So can you tell my listeners the worst incident that you ever heard of, not necessarily involving yourself, and what impact did those posters have? Helena?
I do recall a patient that was being treated as an inpatient. I won't mention where or how. Hmm. And the doctors had given the family bad news, and the family waited one evening outside of the hospital and committed a physical assault on the nurses and some of the doctors that were teaching their shifts.
And do the posters?
I mean, I know that's not a mental health.
No. And do the posters have any impact, or do you think more security guards are needed? What is it, Helena?
The diagnosis.
No, okay.
Sorry.
No, it's because there's a type. Just lastly, do the posters have any impact? Does that calm things down, or what is required, Helena?
I didn't see, and this is quite scientific, I did not see a change in the incident submissions after the posters had been implemented around the units.
So. Okay. I will leave it there. Thank you so much. I understand you phoned in from your holiday because you feel so motivated. It's just a real nuisance. There's an annoying time slip on the line, so we can't quite have a proper exchange of views. But Helena, thank you for the work you did. And now that you've retired, enjoy your holiday over there in Cyprus. Thanks for your input on that. We might return to that. But let's go back to a conversation I had in the first hour of the show. 35,000 jobs required. Now, this, of course, as the unemployment figures came out, they are still stubbornly at 4.7%. There's been no job growth now for 10 of the last 12 months. 10 of the 12 months job losses. Remember, this was a government that wanted to create jobs. So maybe this is why I had the conversation I did with Skills Minister Jackie Nell Baroness Smith. 35,000 jobs needed to get houses and I'm sure other buildings built. Carpenters, bricklayers, plumbers. So that's why the investment in the construction industry has been authorised. Baroness Smith, Skills Minister, explained in more detail.
The colleges will be up and running from this September. It's a £100 million investment. And as you say, these are colleges, one in every region, that will be training up the young people and those who need skills during the course of their careers to work in our construction industry. The Office for National Statistics reckons there are about 35,000 vacancies in the construction industry at the moment. Those are jobs, good jobs that could be filled by young people in this country. Too often I think we've seen employers turning overseas in order to bring people into the country. But by the investment that we're putting in, not only through these colleges, but also other investment into apprenticeships, into skills boot camps, into shorter courses, we're going to be making sure that those opportunities are available to young people in this country. And that, of course, is also enormously important for us to be able to meet the target to build 1.5 million new homes for people to be able to live in.
So when will the chippies and the sparks, when will they actually be online? When can they pick up tools and start working, Minister?
Well, they can start in terms of the colleges from this September.
But actually be available to employers to start building
Well,
we're
homes. Already seeing, because of some of the changes we've already made to apprenticeships and to skills boot camps, we're already seeing people, as a result of government investment, going into the construction industry. The people that are training in the colleges, well, we expect 10,000 per year from this September. And that will mean an additional 60,000 from the Chancellor's investment, 40,000 new learners from the colleges that we're announcing today. And those are also colleges that will be able to make sure that other training providers, other colleges, have got the best learning facilities, they've got the best curriculum, they've got the best teachers, because we've had a challenge getting construction teachers into our colleges as well. And we're tackling it through the investment and the change that we're making to ensure that the expertise is there in our colleges.
So let's get down. Let's get into the construction industry. Let's get to the real coal face of this. Richard's in Sydenham. Richard, what do you think to this initiative? £100 million behind it, by the way. Morning.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning.
Hello.
It's fine. Hello, it's fine. It's fine having £100 million. But who's going to teach the generation coming up? We've hardly got anyone in the construction industry, let alone put them out to go and teach. How are they going to teach? We've got hardly people in the construction industry.
I mean, I don't want to be rude here. No. Perhaps when a bricklayer's done his or her many, many years, they would rather fancy being a teacher rather than lugging bricks up and down when they're in their 50s
yes.
or 60s.
That's my exact point. That's what I was going to get to.
Right.
If we're going to teach these kids, we're going to have to put people from the construction industry who's got the knowledge into these colleges.
Right. But don't you think that's... Are you in one of these trades, sir?
I'm in the construction industry.
Okay. So I don't know what you do, but wouldn't you, if you were in your late 50s or 60s, rather relish working with young people, teaching
yes.
the next generation how to lay brick? I mean,
without a shadow of a doubt. But how we, for you to take, let's get this right, for you to take someone out in their mid-50s up to their 60s, who's earning X amount of money per week,
yeah.
will the government match their wages?
I wouldn't ask what you make, but what sort of money would we need to be looking at, do you think? A good bricklayer in his mid-50s, who perhaps wouldn't mind a slightly slower pace of life, what's he going to be pulling down a day or a week? How does it work? Weekly, monthly?
They're pulling down between 150 to 250, anywhere between that.
So 250, so that's £1,200 a week. That's quite a lot of money we've got to find, isn't it?
There you go. So who's going to give up their job and go, well, I'll go and teach for less money? What's the incentive? Would the government be offering them an incentive?
Doubt it. So what do you think of this initiative?
I think it's a good initiative, but I just think it's not going to be put out very well. I've got to be honest with you. We've got a Prime Minister who probably couldn't change a plug. But that's the way it is. We're going to put all this money into the industry, and it's just going to go wayside because it's just going to use a lot of people, just a lot of hearsay.
Are you glad you did the trade you did?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Will you tell me what it is? Are you a brickie, or do you mind my asking?
No. I'm in the construction industry. I health and safety in the construction industry, and right. I've been in it for like 20 years.
And have so you I've noticed seen, a job...
I've seen massive changes.
Yeah. The minister tells me there are 35,000 jobs required. Do you notice that on a daily basis?
Yeah, because you literally... Some firms are struggling to get people to work, to do work. It's a nightmare.
Mm.
It really is a nightmare. You're struggling to get... As to find a young person, it's really... You know, we do have young people coming through, very small amounts, but we need to have more of them coming through.
Thanks for the points you make, Richard. I've worked it out. You'd need a salary of, I think it's around 55, high 50s for a 46-week year, I'm sorry. 55,200. That's quite a lot of money for the government to find. Richard, thank you. Martin in Gainsborough, the building industry needs fixing. Too easy to not be paid. Too easy for developers to bin you off. Paul says, I've been a Sparks for 45 years. My day rate at the moment, between £250 and £300 a day. This comes in. Oh, you don't want me to give your name. And let me read it. Okay. I won't put your name. I earn twice as much as an engineer, but I teach at college because I love passing the skills on. Well, good luck to you. This comes in from Stuart. I work with colleges. There is part-time roles, but as you say, it's workers who have the skills but have come to the end of the hard graft era. Another Stuart in Bedford. Stuart, what do you want to say? Good morning.
Morning. Yeah, it's the same as that. Most people on site, I'd say the average age of people on site is around 50 years old. You need to start earlier. You need to recognize.
Why aren't youngsters
people
signing up then, Stuart?
I think there's a lot of things involved. There's a lot of different things. What it is, you need to start recognizing earlier people who have got skills with their hands rather than sitting them in front of a whiteboard trying to teach them stuff that they're never going to learn,
right.
Which is exactly what happened to me. I couldn't sit still. I got called a naughty boy. I was always in isolation with a couple of my mates. All of us went into construction early, left school at 15 and went into construction and never looked back. And all of us are doing well. But no one ever recognised that. And they've cut woodworking classes from the school curriculum. They've cut,
oh, I loved woodwork.
All of the stuff that we enjoyed is cut. And you just sit people in front of a whiteboard or in front of a computer screen and say, there you go, learn that. Well, that doesn't suit everybody. In fact, I don't suit the majority of people, but it keeps everyone robotic, which is exactly what everyone wants, which is fine.
Well, hang on, why does everyone, just to jump in, why does everyone want everyone to be robotic?
Well, it's just easier, isn't it?
Is it?
You can like keep your eye on people and stuff rather than like it's an easier place for people to be, you know.
So what do you do, lastly, Stuart?
In construction.
Yeah, but mind I ask what bit of it?
Everything. So
like
my company does.
They'll never say.
My company does everything from groundworks through to roofing, everything in between.
What, design, electric, architecture, planning, development,
the whole
nine yards, from soup to nuts, as they say in the US. Are you busy or do you want a free advert?
Everything. So, pardon?
Do you want a free advert or have you got enough work on your hands?
I've got too much work on my hands. There'll always be too much work.
Great business to be in. Good luck with the business you're running, Stuart. Thank you. Took us to 9:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, and LBC News Headlines. Oh, Thomas Watts.
European leaders have stressed that Ukraine must be able to decide its future ahead of a crunch summit. The statement, agreed by all EU countries except Hungary, comes ahead of Donald Trump's talks with Vladimir Putin in Alaska on Friday. Labour Minister Baroness Smith has told Nick that migrants should not be singled out as a threat to women's safety. The Reform MP, Sarah Pochin, warned yesterday some asylum seekers have medieval views towards women and girls. The UK's jobless rate remained at a four-year high in the 3 months to June. Figures released this morning show unemployment was at 4.7%, reflecting a cooling jobs market. LBC weather, hot and sunny for most, cloudier in the north with a few showers, a high of 34 degrees.
This is LBC.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand. The LBC app
puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day, delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
Hurry, the Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss out on up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, you can still get £50 off your electric blind order. An easy way to control your blinds. But be quick, these offers end 26th of August. And if you find the same product with the same service for less, we'll match the price. Book your free in-home appointment today. Visit hillarys.co.uk. The Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss it. Conditions apply.
Huh. Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what a sarnie should sound like. Go all crisp in with Walker's. Delicious.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
We're going underground, as the song once said, and literally we're going to be talking about incident on the District Line of the Tube. You heard a full report in the first hour of the show from Henry Riley. A group of commuters could face arrest after kicking and dragging a man from a tube train after he dropped his trousers and his pants. BTP, British Transport Police, believe the man, who was later detained under the Mental Health Act, was assaulted on a District Line train. In video shared online, and it is available on the LBC app, and it has been, there's nothing inappropriate that you'll witness there. Up to four passengers, well, it says here, appeared to lunge. I think we can say they lunged at the man after he repeatedly refused to pull up his trousers last Thursday. The man did become aggressive. He'd been yelling before putting his belt around his neck during the journey between Upton Park and East Ham. When challenged by a passenger, the man repeatedly swore at him, became aggressive, and a fight broke out. Now, as I say, BTP are seeking them. Should they be charged, or should they be given a medal? By the way, crimes on the London Underground and Docklands Light Railway, or DLR, as any of us who use it know it, have surged since the pandemic and more than doubled since Sir Sadiq Khan became Mayor of London in 2016. So when you ask, what has the Mayor done for this town? Well, he's made traffic incredibly slow, and he's managed to get crime to double on the Underground. And where is he? I'll comment about this, as the Times reports this. Where is he? If he's talking about air quality at Heathrow, he can't stop, or opportunities for Europe, British people to work in Europe, or vice versa. But where is he on this? Steve's in Shoreditch. These four young men, what should happen to them? Have you seen the video? Morning.
Morning, Nick. Great fan of the show.
That's very kind of you.
Just a quick caveat, Nick. I'm a retired Met sergeant.
Right. Now, that's the sort of bloke we need, because... Have you seen the video, sir?
I've watched it twice, Nick, yes.
Have they gone a bit too far?
It's difficult to make out exactly what's going on. There's a bit of a melee, isn't there? And the gentleman is... I can see the gentleman that they're talking to. He's got his hands in the air. And you do see at least one or two kicks being pushed towards his way. Whether they make contact or not, it's not really visible. He then gets taken off of the train, doesn't he, and restrained to the ground.
By, I think, a plainclothes officer or an off-duty officer who clearly knows what he's doing. He does it all legally.
Yes, you hear him say, I'm a police officer on the actual train. He identifies himself.
Yeah.
First things first, Nick, I think the members of the public and the police officer are incredibly brave.
I agree.
We don't know the gentleman. He's clearly in crisis, gentleman, obviously.
Well, he's going to act irrationally, and you don't know if he might have some kind of weapon, or indeed he must just bite you. You don't know what you're moving into.
Exactly that, sir. Exactly that. They're not psychiatric nurses. They're not trained in safe restraint. Did their emotions get the better of them? Possibly.
Come on, Sarge. You're a sergeant. Have they gone too far?
No.
Interesting.
I don't think so, Nick.
What will the BTP do? I mean, obviously they've got to track them down. Will it be a word of advice, or what do you think will come out of this?
They've got to identify them for starters. I think they'll be asked to attend an interview voluntarily, possibly, to explain their actions. It also depends, well, Nick, has he been injured in relation to this? So we don't know. The individual concerned could have received, a broken bone or something. We don't know, do we? So, I'm reading between the lines. He has had he's obviously sustained some kind of injury. To get restrained like that, you must have sustained some kind of injury. It'd be minor or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
But obviously, they want to get the members of the public to intervene side of the... They probably got the officers, because they probably made a statement. They would have made a statement if they arrested the individual, detained the individual. They probably want the members of the public to intervene side of the story. Probably what we would call a caution plus two, which would be invited into an office for an interview. So that's what I think is probably going to be the course of action.
How long were you in the job?
Just under 28 years, sir.
When did you come out?
2019.
How did it change over those 28 years?
Some for the better, some for the worse. It's a bit of a mixed bag, really, but it's just changed. That's all I'm saying. It has changed.
Would you do it all again?
Yes, in a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat. Look after yourself. Thanks, Steve. Sarah says, if those four passengers hadn't acted in the way they did, that man could have got off the train, then gone on to attack or physically harm other people as his mental health episode continued. Meanwhile, David says, they should be charged. They assaulted a man who was obviously having mental health issues. Well, they didn't necessarily know that, and they had told him to put his trousers on. Now, again, I'm not saying that all four of them necessarily should have piled into that level, but I would hope that those four men, let's hope they come forward. And as we were just hearing, an interview, a conversation is held, they volunteer and they're told, look, we understand emotions are running high. We understand that he was being aggressive and resistant as well. But four of you piling in the way you did, just be aware. But the way this country is at the moment, God only knows which way it'll turn out. Let's get back on the building site, which is 35,000 jobs there for electricians, for plumbers, for carpenters, everyone. Bob's in Billericay. Bob, what sort of trade did you learn? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How you doing?
I'm all right, thank you, sir. What are you going to tell me?
Good. There's so many things that we'll talk about here. And I kind of want to... I don't know if I've got the wrong end of stick, but as I've seen through the years coming up in the building site industry and learning engineering...
How many years, sir?
Just 12.
Yep, okay.
And just seeing engineering as a whole, I've watched loads of new blokes come on, and I've also watched elderly blokes who have been here doing it 30, 40 years, get laid off or get voluntary redundancy. Mm. And then the people that replace these elderly blokes who have got knowledge tenfold, basically, it's... people that have just come out of college, come out of university, that have never touched a tool in their life. Now, no offence, obviously I'm not one to push other people down. Hmm. But these people that are replacing these skillful people haven't done the job before. But they've got, on paper, it looks like they know what they're doing. But when they get thrown into that role, in that position, they haven't got a Scooby.
Right. But wasn't it the same when they were, those blokes who are now in their 50s, wouldn't it have been the same for them 35 years ago?
Of course, yeah, but these blokes that would have started 35, 50, 40 years ago, they would have started on the tools. They would have had to learn what to do. For example, in like the gas industry, you need to learn what tools do what, what to do with what pipe, what pressure runs at, what an ECV is, for example. And
What is an ECV?
It's an emergency control valve, get at a gas meter. But you get like supervisors nowadays who, jump in the position of a supervisor who've just come out of university, but they don't even know what an ECV is. And that's like one of the first most important things you should know, how to gain access to it. And it's just a bit worrying, really.
Are you glad you trained in what you trained in?
Of course I am, yeah.
What persuaded you to do that? Had your dad been in it? Had your mum been in it? Had a brother been in it? What was it?
It's kind of a family thing. My granddad started on it, and then my dad joined in.
Are you a gas fitter? Is that what you do?
I'm a gas engineer.
Gas engineer, right. So you fit boilers and things like that?
I do more like mains replacement. So work out on the streets, on the roads, put traffic lights up.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And the shortage, lastly, 35,000 jobs. I appreciate that you're not necessarily on building sites all the time, but does that sort of chime with what you're hearing as well?
Of course it is, yeah. We need more people every day. I think, there's a lot of workload and a lot of pressure put on every individual to do a job. And it does boil down to, laziness, really. Yeah. You do come across some very lazy workers, but you also come across some extremely hard workers. But you end up burning a candle at both ends if you're a hard worker, because you're boiling yourself out at work, you get home, you've not got a lot of energy, all because someone else couldn't pull their weight.
Oh, absolutely. Bob, good luck with the work you're doing. Well done, keeping the family business going there. Matthew's in Tottenham. Matthew, what are you learning or have you learned? What trade is it? Good morning.
How you doing, buddy? Thanks for taking my call. So I've just finished electrical installation level 2 at a college in Tottenham. Mm-hmm. And it was the worst experience. I got the certificate, but at the end of the day, I still feel like I've not learned anything. So I can kind of like...
How long were you studying for, did you say?
A school term, a year.
Oh, a school year, right, okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A school year. I've never done any electrical work before that, but I went into level 2 because I've done my own, cause I'm nearly 50 years old.
Right.
And, I took this course on because I wanted to better myself. And then at the start of the course, I was really enthusiastic, but I found myself having to watch YouTube videos after the lesson because the teachers didn't speak very well English. Seems like it's right. A ticking box. Yeah, honestly, they just want you to tick boxes.
We just heard from Bob that the teachers there aren't doing ECVs and gas fitting, which of course is an emergency valve or something. So
honestly, it was the worst course. I've been to university. I've done bits of study. I'm nearly 50, so but again, it was the worst experience.
And what did you study at university?
I did film and Spanish. So my reason for doing the electrical thing is because I want to be a Sparky on the film sets.
Ah, right. Okay. Yeah.
So, I've been working in a studio for the last 4 years.
Able to speak Spanish as well, always, if you're working with Penelope Cruz.
I speak Spanish fluently as well, yeah.
Just done. Yeah.
But I'm still doing it. I'm still doing a driving job at the minute because I can't get into the industry. I've got the qualification now. I've 5 years experience working on a film set.
You'd have come out of university 23. So that you came out 20 plus years ago of university.
Of uni, yeah.
What have you been doing for 20 years?
Doing my own business. I've done loads of different stuff. Yeah, bringing up 5 kids.
You brought up 5 children?
Yeah, man. 5 kids. Got another one now. 6 now.
6 children?
Probably giving my identity away to a lot of people.
Well, wow. So you did the course. Presumably you had to pay for this course, did you?
I had to pay a small amount for the course, but I did get some subsidies there.
Okay.
So I did get some help.
So what do you want? What happens next? What do you hope happens now for Matthew?
Well, I've been invited to do level 3, but I'm just not interested because I only need level 2 to get into what I want to do anyway.
Mm.
I don't want to be a domestic electrician, but saying that, any extra skills that I've got, I mean, I would have done it, but the course was so bad.
Yeah.
It's put me off.
But the British movie making is phenomenal, isn't it, if you go up to place?
It's going great at the moment. It's really, really good. But like I said, I'm doing more transport side of it at the moment, trying to get in the door.
Right.
It's not easy. It's not easy to get in, but once you get in, you're there. But obviously,
I think if you've got 6 children, you need to spend as long as your time in the car, really. I mean, you've had enough children, for God's sake, Matthew. Give your wife or girlfriend a break, for the love of all that's holy. Safe driving, Matthew. I hope your dream comes true. We'll go back underground for that tube story. James in Reading. For those people saying the man on the train shouldn't have been manhandled as he was suffering from a mental health incident, remember what resulted from a mental health incident involving Valdo Calacane. These guys should be commended. That, was, of course, the person up in Nottingham who took the lives of those university students and the school caretaker close to retirement. It's 9:45, LBC News Headlines. Thomas Watts.
European leaders are stepping up pressure on Donald Trump to defend Ukraine's interests at a summit with Russia. Officials say England is facing a nationally significant water shortfall as 5 areas remain in drought. The number of people who've arrived in the UK on small boats since Labour took office is set to pass 50,000. LBC weather, hot and sunny for most, cloudier further north, a high of 34 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 22 at London Coney to 21A at the A405. And that's all down to an accident where one lane is closed. Long delays continue in Acton on the A40 eastbound up to Gypsy Corner. It's because of the ongoing works. In Bow, Grove Road is partially blocked northbound. And as a result, there are queues on the approach. On the underground, there are minor delays on the Northern, the Central and Bakerloo lines, and southern trains remain suspended between Uckfield and Crowborough, and that's all down to an ongoing issue with the signals.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Donald Trump seems unlikely to break the habit of a lifetime and upset Vladimir Putin. What does this mean for Ukraine?
James O'Brien on LBC.
Looking to boost your career or just starting out? As the expert in online learning, the Open University has over 200 qualifications to choose from, like business, psychology, computing, and many more. With tutor support and courses that fit around your life, getting those in-demand skills employers are looking for isn't so far away. Register by the 11th of September to get started. The Open University. The future is open.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Outlet shopping at the O2. Get up to 70% off RRP on over 60 designer brands, including Nike, Adidas, Levi's, Sunglass Hut, the cosmetics company store, Le Creuset, and more. Plus, why not make a day of it with over 30 bars and restaurants, a cinema, bowling, interactive football, and more. There's so much to do at the O2 this summer. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search Outlet Shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
Train to Peckham. Kids in tow, rooftop cinema time.
6 packs of popcorn? I think one will do, Nina.
Ah, clear skies, comfy seats, a talking panda. Clearly what we all needed. Okay, everyone's seated in Napoli doing panda impressions. I wonder when Nan can watch the kids so I can come back with James. Oh, just the two of us.
Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced tickets from only £8 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-grid adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge, helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex, as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Or total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Well, we've been at the construction workplace. Let's go to the health workplace. We go to hospitals in the light of this research that shows, or not research, I'm sorry, figures show a 91% lift in attack on nurses and A&E over just 6 years. Adam's in Southampton. What is it you do in the NHS, Adam? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm not a nurse, but I'm a physiotherapist, and I'm typically warden clinic based. So I think the numbers from the RCN are obviously they're true. The numbers are the numbers, but it speaks to a much wider experience of frontline healthcare workers in general, and I think the experiences of colleagues across healthcare, and particularly nurses, because they make up such a large number of the profession, it's all going the same way. And I think one of the real issues here is that people see frontline service workers as there to serve, and to a certain degree a little bit subhuman. And I think within that, then there's no encouragement or support in defending yourself or your role or your responsibility or your peers. I've seen numerous occasions where people have essentially kowtowed to the aggressor. And on the few occasions where people have stood up for themselves and actually effectively de-escalated the situation, not only do they get berated or lack support from their management, but actually there's no consequence on the other side of that.
In what way do they get berated? What happens to them?
Well, so, I mean, I can think of leaving some of the details out. So a particular incident where a member of the public was verbally abusing a colleague of mine and very close to being physically and very close to physically assaulting that person, an intervention took place which attempted to de-escalate to begin with, and then it came to a head, but it was fairly heavy-handed in its approach. Now, the person in question there, rather than having a full investigation in terms of what happened, what they did, what they didn't do, was brought up on fairly significant disciplinary proceedings. And so that's from their immediate line of management. Turns out that actually once it went to appeal and is heard properly and effectively, that the decisions that, or the sanctions that were placed on them were overturned. So the problem there is that
they've not got their backs then.
No, absolutely, but it requires an appeals process to get there, right. Because sometimes the immediate support that people want isn't necessarily there, so it then makes it really hard to stand up for yourself, to advocate for yourself, if you don't think that you're working in a situation where even your line managers, your supporting colleagues, etc., have your back. And so then actually this thing that happens frontline then becomes something that happens in the back office. And again, there's very little recourse.
How common would that lack of support from management be for staff on the front line of the NHS, different areas?
So I think it's fairly common, at least amongst some of the colleagues that I've spoken to, because there is this perception of you work in public service, so you must behave in a certain way. And whilst that is absolutely true, you forget that there are people underneath the uniform, and people will revert to their base levels of training and reactions. So in terms of trying to support people, there is the, no, you do this job, you must behave in a certain type of way, which we completely understand. But actually, people, when they are feeling defensive or put back, need to be able to feel like they can at least have access to support or defend themselves or defend their peers.
Adam, I will leave it there just to get other people involved. Thank you for your input and the work you do. Please understand I'm only finishing with you to get others so they can have their say. Adam, have a good day. Now, Linda's in Barnet. We're going to be talking about the skills shortage. What have you trained in, Linda?
Ah, morning. Nice to talk to you. Bless you. I went into plumbing in 1990, so I got an apprenticeship with the council, which I think the government was wrong to stop all that, because it was a good way, because... What I'd done is I took on a 4-year apprenticeship as a plumber. So I went to college one day a week for 4 years. Mm. And then the other 4 days I was out working, you know, with a plumber training me the trade. And that's how you learn it. But then they stopped all that, which was ridiculous, because kids coming out of school, you could go to college. I mean, I didn't start till I was 19.
It's so funny you're talking about this. There's an article in one of the newspapers today about how UK trades women, the demand outweighs the supply. 2% of the 900,000 tradespeople working in Britain are female. That's around 18,000. But an organisation called Task Her has seen a 208% rise in inquiries in 2 years. People want... are you plumbing now? I don't mean literally the second, but are you still in plumbing?
No, I got a bit sick and tired of getting under the bath, and I was really good at unblocking drains. So I did love that side of it. Everyone hated that side of it, but I did do it.
Why did you like unblocking drains?
I was just, you know, it's just a good feat. Like, I've been to a job where it was coming up. Now, it sounds disgusting, but you get used to it. They used to call me something shoveler.
I know what the word is. It rhymes with pit. Yeah? I imagine it rhymes with pit.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, I just used to suit up, boot up, get my rod in there. And once it's, you know, because it's the worst thing to happen. You go to someone's house and it's just overflowing out of the drain.
Oh,
and
then,
you know, you just, that's fine. Whack the drain bit off, get my rod that.
Right.
Do that. And when, from the minute it goes, and it all goes, and then you clean
that
it all up.
That must be very satisfying when you suddenly hear that gurgle and the whole thing just shoots down through the pipe.
Yeah, it was. But
so
I just,
what do you do now if you're no longer a plumber? What do you do?
Well, I'll always be a plumber, but I did it solid for like about 6 to 8 years, and then always had little odd jobs. I've done a few glamorous jobs as well, but in 2014...
What sort of glamorous jobs?
Or, I've run champagne bars, I've worked in clubs. I've done all that, yeah. Yeah, I also had a little job working for Playboy in Greece. That was good.
What did you do for Playboy in Greece? Modelling?
I was a bunny girl.
You were a bunny girl. Are they still... Are we allowed? I don't know. Are they allowed anymore? I'm not sure.
I think they've got a club in London. I'm not too sure. But this was in 1999. It was in the Standard. My friend saw it. And it was for Playboy, for Hugh Hefner, Chrissy Hefner. So we went for the interview. We got it. And basically, they opened up a club in Rhodes. I think it's still there, like a casino.
Right.
So we lasted about 6 months out there. But,
and
you
what
know,
was your job, to go around dressed as a rabbit taking cigarettes to people?
Well, taking drinks,
Drinks.
Yeah,
right.
But then someone put the equivalent of 20 pence on my tray and I'm walking around in these high heels, so I just flicked it back at him and I got called into the bunny room.
You got called into the bunny room, right?
Yeah, okay. Because they watch you. They watch everything. So I've got the ump and I sort of like, it was the equivalent of 20 pence and I'm walking around in these high heels, this little bunny outfit. We got called everything when we worked there, you know, but, you know, it was a laugh, it was fun and it was good that I'd done it when I was younger, but I'm 52 now, but, you know.
Right. Do you still dress as a bunny?
No, not even at the weekend. No.
So lastly, how are you making a crust now?
Well, unfortunately, I've had a couple of illnesses happen to me, but I've been in, since 2014, I've been in the metering industry, so...
Metering?
Yeah, fitting gas meters, electric meters.
Oh, fantastic. Linda, you look after yourself. Those skills have served you well, haven't they? Fantastic. 208% rise in people wanting female construction workers, plumbers, electricians like Linda. Have a safe day. Michelle in Tunbridge Wells. Michelle, you've got about a minute and a bit. Go ahead, Michelle. What are you going to tell us? This is your son. Now, what's happened to him?
Yeah, so I was listening to the gentleman before who said he'd been on a college course to advance his knowledge of the business. Mm. Same thing happened to my son, qualified as an electrician as a young man, then wanted to advance his skills, went to college, paid £4,000 for a course, and like the gentleman previously, teachers didn't have much knowledge. I'm not saying he knew more than them, but quite a lot of the time, the information he got was incorrect.
Oh, Lord.
And again, he was coming home and having to look things up, and so the quality of the teaching wasn't great, even though he paid that amount of money for it. So he was no really better off once he'd done the course.
So what did he do?
Well, he's still in the trade and he does make good money and he's still pursuing that. I think he's looking at a different college to enrol in the hopes that he'll get a bit better.
But that's hugely disappointing for the boy, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I just think when you've been in the trade but you need these qualifications to progress, so you know the business, I think maybe there should be some subsidy for the courses just because they know their trade, they just need that qualification.
Well, that's what it's all about, isn't it, in that job? Listen, I have to go. Will you give your son my best wishes and hope it works out for him? Thank you, for we are done for another day. James O'Brien is waiting the other side of the news here on LBC. I will be back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and it's one of those mornings where you find yourself wondering what it is that makes things matter. It doesn't feel like that long ago that the illegal invasion of Ukraine was animating the attention of the entire world, with no room for dispute about the depravity of Vladimir Putin, or indeed his murderous ambition. And yet Donald Trump, currently the President of the United States, spent much of yesterday heaping praise upon the Russian dictator and describing himself or mourning the fact that he used to be the apple of Putin's eye before the invasion. And it is to that benighted territory that our attention is inexorably drawn once again. If Trump continues to back Putin over Zelensky, what happens to Ukraine?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Donald Trump is facing growing calls from European leaders to defend Ukraine's interests at Friday's summit with Vladimir Putin. A statement from all EU states except Hungary says the path to peace cannot be decided without Kyiv. Mr. Trump raised the prospect of both sides ceding land during a White House press briefing yesterday. The Guardian's David Smith, who was there, says the remarks have triggered some alarm.
He suggested that within 2 minutes he might know if Putin wants to make a deal, and if the answer is no, Trump said basically he'd wish Putin good luck and that would be the end of this negotiation, which is not hugely reassuring. Trump criticized Volodymyr Zelensky for mishandling the situation.
A government minister has told LBC that asylum seekers should not be singled out as a threat to women and girls. Baroness Smith has pushed back against Reform UK's claim that some have a medieval view of women's rights.
There are too many, largely men, who are responsible for violence against women of all types. And that's why we need to take the sort of action that this government is taking. And it's why I hope Reform will change their position and actually support us in the tough legislation that we're bringing forward to tackle that violence.
Reform MP Sarah Pochin claimed yesterday that some migrants are much more likely to be convicted of sexual offences than British people. The number of migrants who have crossed the English Channel since Labour took office is set to pass 50,000. Ministers have admitted the issue remains a very big challenge, but say they are taking action to tackle the issue. It's claimed nearly all pharmacies in England have seen a surge in shop theft in the past year. LBC's Tom Harrigan has more details.
The National Pharmacy Association asked more than 450 of its members about theft. 88% said the problem had got worse in the past 12 months, with reports of people filling bags with drugs and walking out the shop. A similar number claimed their staff had faced more aggressive behaviour than before. A fifth had seen physical assaults on their employees. Experts are also concerned about people taking stolen medicines that haven't been prescribed for them, saying it could seriously affect their health.
Britain's jobless rate remained at a four-year high in the 3 months to June. Figures released this morning show unemployment stood at 4.7%, reflecting a cooling in the jobs market. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 25 at 91.55. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, hot and sunny for most, cloudier with a few showers further north, a high of 34 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Today's another busy one in the Thing household. Mum's mowing the lawn, Dad's cooking tea, Ash is upstairs spinning tunes, and the twins are on a mission. Luckily, the Things are beating the price cap with a cheaper fixed tariff from British Gas. So, the twins can keep making sure the galaxy stays safe. Search British Gas tariffs. British Gas, taking care of things. Eligibility and T's and C's apply. To verify, visit britishgas.co.uk/verify.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. There's a PhD to be written, isn't there? I'm not going to do it, but you feel free. A PhD to be written on not just what it is that makes things matter to us, but what it is that makes that change. Because, of course, what mattered a year ago might be rather different from what mattered today, despite the fact that the situation on the ground or the things that made us care haven't actually gone away. We just care less. A form of emotional attrition, almost. You just sort of chip away. I'm thinking of Ukraine and, to a lesser extent, Gaza. I think Gaza has come back round again with the increasingly irrefutable evidence of appalling conduct there. Ukraine has gone quiet for many of us, even though the fighting continues and the tensions remain at fever pitch. And, of course, the reason why it's back in the spotlight today has very little to do with what is happening on the ground in Ukraine and everything to do with the fact that Donald Trump is set to meet his hero in Alaska on Friday, Vladimir Putin, and seek, well, what exactly? A distraction from the continuing Epstein scandal back home in America, I suspect. I don't know that Donald Trump is in a position to do anything at all. 24 hours, was it? He said he'd have it fixed in on the campaign trail. He'd have this war finished within on the first day back in power. And then he has a meeting and Vladimir Putin says things to him and he comes out doing a lap of honour, Donald Trump, that is. And 10 minutes later, Vladimir Putin sends more missiles into Ukraine and makes an absolute mockery of whatever it was that Donald Trump thought that he had achieved in the first place. Excuse me. The bit I can't quite get my head around, even now, is the contempt with which he speaks of Volodymyr Zelensky. Not just, of course, the contempt with which he speaks about him, but the utter contempt with which he speaks to him. Most obviously when he turned up in the White House. The best way to understand this is to boil it down to almost primeval, atavistic behaviour. Donald Trump honestly believes that bullies should prevail. So that if the big boy at school demands your dinner money, then you are an idiot if you do not give it to him. I do think sometimes it can be that simple. You are an idiot if you do not give him your dinner money. If you go to the teacher to complain, you are an idiot. If you seek to muster together a group of friends that might be able to resist the bully, you are an idiot. If you do anything other than recognize the, quote, natural, end quote, order of things, then you are an idiot. I am bigger than you, and I want all your money. Certainly, sir. Here it is. Because the clip from yesterday that I couldn't really get my head around was still, even now, having witnessed so much of it, was the bit about how Zelensky had got everything wrong. I can't believe he did what he did, said Trump. I'll find the clip for you in the next few minutes, and or rather Eleanor will. But the idea that he looked at the illegal invasion of Ukraine by a murderous despot, a genocidal maniac, and decided that the people resisting it were the wrong ones in this piece. I think it's worth pausing here for a minute, isn't it? It's worth pausing here just for a nanosecond. You watch an illegal invasion of sovereign territory, which is expected to unfold almost seamlessly. They were expecting to have a Kremlin puppet installed in Kyiv by the end of that original, that opening weekend. The scale and the strength of the Ukrainian resistance, I think, shocked everybody except Ukrainians, probably even shocked some of them. And Trump's position remains that Zelensky should have legged it, should have rolled over, should have bent, surrendered, acquiesced. And Trump, well, either can't forgive him for that, or simply can't understand it, can't understand the defiance of that so-called natural order. And here we are now. Years later, 3 years later, give or take, here we are now looking at a changed map with Russian forces successfully repelled in the northeast of the country and still camped on the southeastern borders. Donetsk is still, and of course Crimea, which was already still under Russian control. And now Donald Trump turns up on Friday to tell Putin what? I don't even know. So what question do we ask today? I wonder whether the West has made a terrible mistake by leaving Donald Trump in charge. I wonder whether it should have been clear, whether or not we had the capacity to do it or not, I do not know. But I do know that the Financial Times reports this morning a tripling in speed of Europe's production of weapons. The weapons factories of Europe are expanding at three times the rate of peacetime. 7 million square meters of new industrial development that represents rearmament on a historic scale. It's gone into overdrive since that full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022. The FT has looked at radar satellite data covering 150 facilities across 37 companies. This is a defense revival, the likes of which many thought we would never see. Most obviously that American historian Francis Fukuyama, who wrote about the end of history when the Berlin Wall came.